We are recording now, yes.
All right, I'll be good then. I'll say nice things. So, wait, is Serve on yet? Because we want to talk about you and the porn sites.
Uh-huh. Serve's about to join. What do you want to talk to me about the porn sites for?
Well, that's what you're doing with the router.
I kind of really want to know what he's doing with the router.
Yeah, my kid's at camp. Cosette is making jokes about him kissing girls at camp.
My gotta get across the lake first.
No, they're in the same lake.
So
they're in the same camp.
Well,
it's boys and girls together.
Well, so my daughter went to camp and she comes back and she goes, oh yeah, there's a Boy Scout camp across the, she's like, Girl Scout camp. There's a Boy Scout camp on the other side of the lake. I'm like, oh. I start laughing. I go, that's the premise of every 80s film I've ever seen.
Every 80s film ever, right there.
She goes, you know, oh, and lightning struck the lake. And I said, that's the premise of every 80s horror film I've ever seen.
The electricity goes out. Don't leave the cabin. No, he goes to a camp where they have different cabins, but their groups are all boys and girls together.
Sure, they have different cabins, uh-huh.
They do! Stop it!
Different until they sneak out.
Different in the sense that they're assigned to different ones.
Is a good child, just like John's child is a good child. And
how old is your child?
14.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up, sir. No help. Oh, sir, are you watching? Yeah,
I barely ever snuck out.
I never snuck out.
Well, then you missed out.
My mom didn't care. She encouraged it.
Did you go on? Just be back before sunrise?
No, she just let me have the girls over to the house at night, spending the night. My mom wasn't terribly responsible.
You are fibbing on that.
I am not. You can ask my current wife about that when you see her.
We will. That sounds like a conversation for the parents after the little kiddos go to bed.
You know.
Or watching a movie and we don't have to listen.
I think it's, you know, John and I aren't all that different again. Go figure. My parents, my dad, all the way through high school, he had a job in another city. So every other weekend, my mom would drive to where he was, and then the next weekend he would drive to where we were living. And so every other weekend from my junior through senior year, I had a nice house to myself. So every other weekend it was party at Serve's house.
Huh. Well, see, my parents left me alone, but I was the boring kid. So see, they still don't know what I got up to, but I never snuck out. I might have had somebody over, but I never snuck out. And I would say, honestly, when my child becomes older, I would rather he be over here and know where he is than in a car somewhere or not knowing where he is. What was it?
I can hear John way in the background.
I can hear him grunting as he's moving. Yes, he set up a new, what he
I'm wiring, did. I'm wiring cables.
He's wiring cables, and he set up a new router
I'm not
thing.
Wiring
so
cables,
he
I'm
has
running cables.
The nanny router on for the kids, and then he has the full open router for him, so he can still get his porn.
Well, hey. Got to take care of number one, you know.
Can you do me a favor? Well, see, am I just being naive in that I don't? I'm really hoping my child hasn't found porn on the internet. Am I just being that naive?
It may not be strictly, you know,
porn.
It may be like comic porn.
Okay.
You know, I mean, but at 14, yeah, he's
found something. Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't want to know. That's all right. Let me just
don't spend a lot of time with the socks. You know, just wash them. Move on.
What the? Why would you do that in a sock?
It's a perfect receptacle.
Just do it in the shower, and then it just goes down the drain.
Yep,
that's one of many places. How many things of tube socks have you gone through lately?
Me?
No, I'm talking to.
No, Lee. He doesn't. No, no, not no, none. Well, he gets holes in socks, but that's
that he mysteriously has to throw away.
No, I throw away when I'm washing them because I don't wash holy socks or I don't give them back. Hmm. Just remember, you're going to be here in about a week.
Just saying, don't spend a lot of time on the socks. Just put them in the wash.
No, oh, God. There's both good and bad things about having guys as friends. I don't want to know these things.
Hey,
and
you know
one
what?
Good thing.
If he wasn't doing these things, then you need to be real damn worried.
Then I need to be worried. That is very true. I mean, he does do the 30-minute showers now, and so I'm just like, I don't want to know. I'll just pay the water bill. I don't want to ask about it. No. It's fine. Whatever.
Yep. And anything that you find, you know, tucked under the bed, under...
That's why I have a maid. I don't make the beds. It all works out real well. I don't want to know.
La-dee-da, I have a maid.
Oh, please. I have a maid because I'm working like 60 hours a week right now. And then plus Dragon Con. Oh, Serve, what shows are you watching? I know the following.
Game of Thrones?
Yeah, no, not me.
I'm not watching the following.
Oh, you're not watching the following.
I'm watching the following.
No. You're watching. Yeah, I've already got you on the following thing. Are you watching Orphan Black or any of that?
Who, me?
I am not.
Okay.
Have you
met Serve?
Right. What panels do you need people for? You know, I've got enough time. I could actually probably get caught up.
What? Watch some Orphan Black, man. That'd be good because I got you and Wolven.
How did you wind up with Orphan Black?
Because it's actually much more of a conspiracy than anything else, and it's on BBC, but it's actually done in Canada. It's just because BBC bought the rights in the US.
That's what you should be. Well, then again, you'd get everything then also. I was going to say you should be Canada track.
But then
you would get everything, so.
Rox, I got you on Warehouse 13, and I don't know what else. I mean, of course, the two need coffee panels. All of us are on those.
Right.
Let me see. I'm looking.
Got anything cool? I like that villain panel. It was great last year.
I'm thinking about actually doing a with the father
time.
Brian's no Father Small, who's the priest.
He's pretty big around here.
What happens when the aliens really come?
Ooh.
And that's exactly why I have a router.
Man, I'd like to be on the
John.
Yeah, I thought about for
yes.
you.
Harry Farrell pets now.
Let me see.
That'd be my guess when the aliens show up.
Well, I mean, but that's the question, you know, what happens? So I got you on, of course, Warehouse 13 Rocks. I got you on the knee cock. Come on, open up, you little rat bastard.
Sorry, I can't get my belt off.
Oh, John, where are you staying Wednesday night? Do you have a hotel room?
We have a hotel room, yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, darn. We couldn't have a slumber party like last.
In fact,
all have a slumber party instead.
I think so, too.
We've got an entirely full room that night, so.
Really? Who?
Who's showing up?
Serve, right? You did say you were going, right?
Brian, John, I've got you doing a Fringe panel and a Lost panel, too.
You're still doing Lost?
You're still doing Lost?
You know how many people...
That son of a bitch for everything.
They ask for these panels all
But they actually, you actually have Fringe and Lost guests, don't you? Not only Lost guests, I guess that's
Not
Fringe
Lost,
guests.
But Fringe guests, yeah. Yep, that too. John Noble had to cancel.
Oh, did he?
Oh,
that worked.
Is that,
well, he got work. That's good.
Is that public knowledge yet or no?
Actually, I saw it on the big thing, so.
Oh, okay.
Hey, at least we're the convention that says, hey, they got work. Awesome.
But, yes. I'll email everybody.
Are you okay?
Oh, my God. What's happening at the...
Oh, my God. The NSA has come for John. The NSA is coming. John, run! Run, John!
Oldest child just scared the bejesus out of him. I know what happened, and that's awesome. She wins!
Okay, I'm back.
Your daughter scared the shit out of you, didn't she?
No. John, what have they done to you? Blink twice if it's still you.
I take back the comments previously stated were not from what? Me. From me. And there is no jihad.
I want proof of life. And... I want to see proof of life.
That was a terrible movie.
Okay, well, don't panic anymore. Start the podcast again. I'm going to go get a beer. I'll be right back.
Start the podcast again. What makes you think it was stopped?
You know, restart. We're all done.
All right, so whoever wants to stay with me just Wednesday night, let me know.
Set up until the rest of the podcast.
There, Rocks.
I know. Well, you know, from our little group. Not, you know,
she just throws it out all over town.
The big group. So, no, sorry, you can't stay with me.
Well, yeah, now she says that, but I bet if you asked real nicely, maybe bought her a couple of drinks, I think you got a shot.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh my God. All right, so since we've basically pulled the starter card on the podcast again, since it sort of sputtered to an end there. All right, so who saw Man of Steel?
I did.
Yeah. I don't care.
I did.
No one else, huh? All right, so John?
Yes?
Well, how did you feel about Man of Steel?
I thought it was a perfectly fine film. It is...
Popcorn movie?
He got all peaky there, so you knew he liked it.
Well, okay, so... so, yes, it was perfectly fine. No, I really enjoyed it. I didn't think it was... It was a lot better than I had actually expected, to be honest with you. And I felt from,
are we talking Superman?
Yeah.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Well, we're talking Man of Steel, but anyway, being nerdy. The
white nerdy.
The, what do you call it?
Why you gotta get all racist?
I'm gonna be honest with you, Widge. I didn't watch your Way Homer yet, for it, but.
Me neither.
But I didn't see it in 3D. I saw it in standard, two-dimensional,
you're
things.
Fine.
I was one.
And it's perfectly fine.
I was 1D short.
Perfectly.
Although I think that film might have worked okay in IMAX, just plain IMAX.
Yeah. Maybe.
But, at some point, my son, he actually had got up in, with my wife and gone to the bathroom during the, final Zod fight.
Yeah. Oh, dear
right,
God.
Right before he did the thing that he did, which I will save spoilers for, I guess. Which, by the way, I don't know why everyone's upset about that, but anyway.
Whoa, wait a minute. Who's upset about what?
About the, do you want to just put spoilers
it's going
right
to all be spoilers.
Well, hang on. The ending of the Zod fight, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
People are?
Yes.
Yeah.
People are very upset about
People
that.
People are upset about
because
that, saying it's
un-Superman
like. I'm like, he's done
no,
it four
that's
times.
That's from the comic books. That's straight from the comic books.
It was in the movie. It's not like.
Well, it's not even that. That is taken. That, my understanding is the whole.
It is. You're right.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, now, the one thing I will say is that I do see the point of that happens, and next thing you see, it's all. Oh, haha, everything's great and whatever. It's like, no, somebody took a jackhammer to the planet and.
Well, there was that, but that's what my son, when he came back, he goes, I explained to him what they missed and he's like, oh. I said, well, they were just smashing so many walls. How many walls can they go through before.
Oh my God, I did.
And that was a very valid point.
Issues there.
But yeah. the reality is that's what would happen in a fight like that.
Yes.
It is. It's not. You know, it's not an unusual thing that these two. One of the things that was nice about Thor, the movie, was that they had that. They actually had the fight out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they had that little town that they just
right.
Got,
they basically it basically yeah, got annihilated. Right. Had they have done the same thing inside of which? I mean, they sort of did in Avengers. I know that I've seen some things posted around on Facebook or whatever. Well, the estimated damage for blah, I don't know how the heck you figure out that estimated damage on a stinking movie. Who knows what other things were going on anywhere else during the Avengers film. But, the claim is that the Avengers did less damage, which sure, I guess. I don't know.
It's different damage. But I mean, right. I think the thing, okay, so.
But that was if there's one thing that kind of did get drag on, it was that fight. But of course, that is the kind of fight that would occur. And it was very convenient that he was in the places where he was at the times he was. He's an incredibly lucky gentleman.
Well, the problem with that fight was is that you had the whole thing before it of, okay, we need to, and I mentioned this in the review that I haven't seen, basically you have the problem with Superman is he's so fucking powerful that you have to come up with something to basically keep him busy. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a 2-hour and 20-minute movie. It would be like a 30-minute movie, if that. So they had to send him like to the other side of the planet to fight gravity, you know? So it's like, I'm like, really? And then we're going to have your baby ship is going to be turned into a bomb. Okay. Really? Really?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Well, I got to say, all honesty, so I went in, I'm not a Superman, you know, not a comic book person, all of this. And I went in just to go see it because honestly, it was like, you know, I'm going to go see it. It was fine. But I actually pulled out whatever piece of paper I could find and wrote in the theater. So this is like, my notes are all over this.
Oh shit. Go. What are your notes?
Well, first of all, this was early on. One was, what the fuck, dragons? Because the early scenes of flying dragons just kind of, dragonflies really, not even dragons, which just kind of really freaked the hell out of me. I don't know why that freaked the hell out of me, but I'm like, okay, you've got a planet that can have spaceships and you're still flying big ass dragonflies or dragons or whatever the hell they were. It just kind of bothered me a lot. I found it very odd that Superman had chest hair. Am I the only person that did?
Why is that odd?
Why is it odd?
I've never seen a Superman with chest hair before.
I think he has in the comics at least once or twice.
Okay. It really kind of freaked me out.
I did notice something though while you're on the planet thing is that
yes.
Is that I think that Zack Snyder.
Snyder.
I think he used his leftover effects from Sucker Punch for making Krypton, because all that stuff seemed to come right out of Sucker Punch.
Well, now, you know, I mean, I said at the time that Sucker Punch was basically, now we knew what Superman was going to look like because of, you know, the just over-the-top crazy effects that were going on.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, and the one thing that really bothered Kidlet was the little things that flew around and had the faces on them. He didn't have any problem with those. He thought those were great. He's like, why the hell wouldn't you do them in color? If you're going to do something that's going to look like something, and it's the little things that had the little blocks that change shapes and were talking to you, he's like, why not do them in color? And then my husband, of course, goes into, why do them at all? Because you've gone from something where there was a screen and you could actually see the actual person you're talking to this stupid pixelated ass thing.
Now, let me just point out.
Okay.
We are talking about a technologically superior society and culture.
Uh-huh.
That can't figure out how to have a memory stick properly seat itself.
It's instead of, number one.
Of course, and you're not going to be able to use a screen.
And by the way, the whole world is saved in a jawbone. Okay. The other thing is, I did think the lizard skin suit on Superman was pretty damn good. It enough of the lizard scales kept distracting me from the really nice codpiece package that Superman had.
And let me just say, I'll just interrupt you there again, Lee. It's impressive to distract you from a codpiece package.
It is damn impressive. Then I wrote down, oh my God, could there have been more Battlestar Galactica people in this movie?
There could have been.
I don't know. Could there
come
have been?
On.
There could have been a few more.
Okay. You could have thrown Richard Hatch in, but I thought that was pretty awesome. And then only can Superman and Captain America say some of the cheesy ass things they say and just sound so damned just sincere. And you just don't even want to laugh at them too much. I have many more notes, but some of them are just like,
well, Widge,
going into awesome voice and
Widge, what's your review of it?
Chest hair.
I saw you only gave it 2.5 cups.
I think I gave it 2 because I've decided that did I give it 2.5 or 2? No, I think I gave it 2.5.
World War Z 2. Yeah.
World War Z is where I've started just basically docking films a half a cup for wasting my money with 3D.
But, good. You're way behind on that.
Yeah, I know. I know. I am so way behind on everything. I'm even behind on figuring out what I'm behind on. Which is
If you wait long enough, you'll get back to the front of the line.
I know. It's like, what was it? Sedgefield jeans. You know, world's round, isn't it?
Hey, Widge. It's right behind you.
Ah!
It's pancakes.
Oh, no, it's one of Motel's kids. Oh, no, never mind.
Well, okay, how long do you think it'll take? How many more years, or do you think 3D is here to stay?
3D is here to stay. 3D is here to stay because it makes shit tons of money, especially overseas. And, I mean, sadly, you do have some films that the 3D is good in. You just don't know. I mean, like, you know, Hugo, amazing.
Right.
Avatar, amazing. Even Dread was pretty tasty, you know?
But Star Trek was decent in 3D as well. Saw 3D IMAX.
It was fine. I don't know that I couldn't have lived without it, though.
I didn't see it in 3D.
Hold on, it's actually called Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, that one. Okay.
There's no pause in there whatsoever. It's all one
Star Trek Into Darkness.
And Iron Man 3 was just okay in 3D. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
it's just
my
okay.
3D thing. First of all, if you film it in 3D, I'll pay to go and watch it in 3D. If you retrofit it, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a good.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah,
I do. I like it.
If you spend the money on front, I'll spend the money on the back end. If you just retrofit it,
hey
and
now,
fuck it up a little bit. No, thank you. And I agree. I think it's here to stay, but I think it's going to wane. It's going to continue to fluctuate. There will be times where there's lots of them, and there will be times where there's hardly any. And that's just because people are going to get sick of it, and then someone will do something really good, and it'll kind of come back for a little bit, and then it'll die off and come back.
Katy Perry film, 3D. That was awesome.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Somebody make sure to give rocks a value.
Out of form words after
that.
Well,
I mentioned that last year. I snuck my niece into that. We didn't even pay for it.
What's your excuse?
I'm just glad you didn't pay for it. Well, I am much like you, which is, it was a movie. Was it a great movie? It was a movie. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't like a really good cup of coffee that stays with you. It was kind of like a bad slice of pizza.
Well, the problem was that, first of all, the cast was awesome, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I thought Henry, like I said, Henry Cavill, the fact that he made me, like, believe that somebody else besides Christopher Reeve could be Superman is, like, impressive. Because Christopher Reeve is, like, fucking Superman the way that Linda Carter is just Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? Gladly.
No, I was just saying that they are able to do that sincerity of this kind of, that you really believe in them in that way. And you don't think it's as cheesy as it really should be. Yeah, I agree. Well, they're able to act through it.
It's like I said, that the fact Superman is the guy who says, excuse me, before he goes to save the world. Uh-huh. That's Superman.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain key character moments, like, you know, when that make you go, holy shit, he's got it. Like in the first X-Men film, Hugh Jackman, you know, does it hurt when those pop out every time? You are Wolverine. Thank you. You got the key moment that I needed. Right. Thank you. But so I thought he was great. I thought, Michael Shannon was fucking awesome. I mean, like I said in the review that I still haven't watched, Zod could be such a cartoon. Especially being as shouty as he is. But Michael Shannon is so fucking good that he makes that character with all of his reasons for what he's doing believable, so that you, okay, I see why you're the way you are, and it makes sense, and that I'm good with that, you know? So it's just like, how can Superman be as sincere as he is? How can Zod be as shouty and mean as he is? Well, here you go. That's the reason why.
There he is, right.
And I thought this was probably the best Kevin Costner we've seen in years.
Oh, yes.
He was perfectly cast.
He as my
play
wife
a farmer.
As my wife points out, he looks good in corn.
Good line. He does get
like,
on farm.
Oh wait, yeah. Every time you put him around corn, the farm, anything like that, he seems to have his best
well,
job.
No.
Put him in a baseball cap.
Well, he did the Hatfields and McCoy, so, okay. You know.
Well, there is that. So well, it is the exception that proves
corn,
the rule.
But, you know, out in the middle of nowhere.
I would like a Sylvester McCoy audio commentary track on the Hatfields and McCoys.
Okay.
You know, I even liked Fishburne's Perry.
No, he was good.
Damn earring, which was
annoying. Oh my god, that problem, was a bit much.
The problem that I had, the thing though about Costner is that whole moment before, if you know what I'm saying,
yes.
Spoilers.
Oh, yes. That was awesome.
Was great. I mean, he sold that moment when that moment, if you really wanted to think about it, didn't make a lot of sense. Okay,
no, nope. It did not. The wrong person was out there.
Not at all.
But he made it work within the context of the film, which is very, very impressive.
Well, and actually, it was the discussion we had on the way home, other than some of the other things. But one of the discussions was when, and this is not a spoiler because it was in the trailers, is, you know, do I let people die? Well, maybe. And that's really tough. Because honestly, you, as a parent, I can see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, I could, because the issue there is, this is the world ready for you? The world is not. The world is not ready. And I felt that they actually did a really good job with actually showing us not being ready in that. I thought that actually they did pretty well. That we still weren't really comfy here. We're not happy. So. Until later. You got to kind of prove yourself a little bit. Which, that was neat. But no, yeah. I think that was a very, that could have been a moment that the, you know, maybe sometimes, yeah, you do. You let them go. You let them die. And I thought that could have been a really, really terrible moment. But the way they played it and the way they moved it forward, excellent. Excellent job. Diane Lane was great in it.
Yes. Yeah, she's very good. She's normally quite good, so this mm-hmm. is good.
And I would concur with my wife. Probably the weakest person though in the cast was
Lois.
Lois, yeah, Amy.
Well, but to be fair, she didn't have a lot to do.
That's true.
I mean, there's so many, and that's what I find frustrating is that so many of those sort of characters, you could almost bring in anybody to play them, you know, because they don't really give them anything to do other than. I mean, conveniently fall out of planes before they get destroyed so they can be saved. You know? I would have been much more impressed if she'd died. And that's not a spoiler because, like, Lois Lane is going to die. You know, that's why it would have been so impressive. Hey, if George R. R. Martin had written Man of Steel, she'd be dead as shit.
Oh, my God, okay? Yeah.
So would Superman.
Yeah, I know.
Zod would have been the one going
everybody.
On.
Watch this.
I did. This might be old news, but I did find this great picture of Peter Dinklage and George R. R. Martin sharing a laugh, and someone had added the caption, "You're a funny little guy. I'll kill you last."
Now, let me ask you this: when he was fighting gravity,
Superman,
as you put it,
Dinklage. I'm just curious.
Yes. Dinklage is in a constant fight with gravity.
Oh, hey, that wasn't a short joke. I was just talking about Game of Thrones. No short jokes. Okay, keep going.
The, what do you call it? Did anybody else, or was it just me, because my wife didn't see it, did anybody else feel like his face morphed to Christopher Reeves for just a moment?
No.
It must have just been me. I thought that it looked like his face morphed into Christopher Reeves for just a moment as like the gravity was pushing down on his face.
I will watch that when we get the DVD and see if that happens. I wouldn't be surprised of them doing something.
And then really he cool. spoke in an Irish accent, which was really weird. Nothing.
Are you
call back to previous episodes? No, not at all.
Oh yes. I'm sorry.
Not awake.
Now, if he was fighting magnetism, that would make sense. But anyway,
yeah, Yeah, so overall, I thought, but why only two and a half cups? I mean, it seems like out of five,
again,
right?
Okay, but yeah, again, I had really serious problems with it being so stupid. Like, the whole, it was so convoluted as to how they were supposed to fight them. You know, well, you need to fly to the other side of the planet and take out this thing while we take a plane and we retrofit your baby ship as a bomb, and then we take it. And, oh, by the way, we're not going to arm it until we're right on top of the thing. Oh, and by the way, you have to spin it the right way. Oh, and by the way, this memory stick isn't going to seat itself because we set that up earlier in the film. I'm like, this is all fucking stupid. Here's my question as well. Why were they terraforming Earth? Why, if you've established... Like, no, but here's the thing.
They could be... gods among them if they didn't.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you just, because they said the reason he's able to fly is because of gravity and stuff. It's not just the yellow sun. They established that in the film. The gravity is different on Earth, so that's why you're able to leap around and shit. Why would you change the planet? First of all,
they don't want to be gods. They want to bring back all the Codex people and make Krypton again.
Okay, so in other words, it makes no sense, is what you're saying. Because
I didn't agree that it made any damn sense. I'm just going with their logic.
But that's just it. There is no logic. And, you know, the idea that you could change I thought I don't know how the solar system works exactly, but I thought the reason why we're in the orbit we're in is because the planet has the mass that it does.
That is
and
true.
Is the way that it is, right? So wouldn't if you changed the mass of the planet, wouldn't that change the orbit?
It could, cause the moon to fly off. Or no, draw to it, I'm sorry. It would cause the moon to draw to it and collapse into it.
And go boom.
That's a very good point.
So, my whole thing is, if Zod is like, well, all I'm about is, you know, providing for Krypton and saving my people. There's nothing that says saving your people like, hi, welcome back to existing. Now you're a fucking superhuman and can do anything you want. And by the way, here is the slave race that I've just conquered for you, and they'll do anything you want because otherwise I'll fucking chop them off at the knees. So that's why two and a half.
Maybe, Widge, maybe you're a little more megalomaniacal than Zod.
No.
He didn't think of it that way.
No, because Zod is played by Michael Shannon. And if there's an actor who could do megalomaniacal on this planet, he is the new Christopher Walken, okay?
Uh-huh.
So I think, Rox, wouldn't you agree? So, but anyway, the other thing is, I got first of all, the fight was extended by the fact that you had them on different sides of the planet and bullshit. But I can't believe that of all the places where you wanted some fucking stop motion, slow motion fighting, you didn't have any of that going on in the entire fucking Zod fight. So instead, half the time I had no idea who the hell was punching whom. And the only thing I could count on was that like I said, it made no sense for Superman to have a cape unless you understood that he had to have a red blur on him so you could pick him out from all the other blurs that were going on in the fucking fight sequences.
Well, now I did have a question about that because, okay, in the ones I remember, the person who makes Superman's costume is his mother, his Earth mother. But in this case, the costume comes from Jor-El.
Why in God's name,
everything they've all been wearing has been this monochrome brownish gray. Why did you make it blue and red and yellow?
Well, it was barely blue and red and yellow. It was slightly tinted blue and red and yellow.
Well, but it was not the colors of the other what everybody else was wearing on Krypton.
I don't know. I have no idea. Didn't
think of the fashion aspect of this movie? I'm very disappointed.
No. The part of it that I did appreciate was the fact that, okay, his costume is battle armor. I'm good with that. All right. Thank you for not letting me see it so much that I would get pissed off at the fact that you basically, okay, you know what it looked like? It looked like there was this Super Friends episode where they like went to Middle Earth or something and were all turned into dwarves or something crazy like that. And like Superman's outfit became like black and red. I'm like, that's kind of what appeared to have happened to Superman's outfit. But I was fine with the costume because they didn't let me dwell upon it. And I only got points for that. But I mean, I don't understand about the coloring. I don't understand about the cape. I just don't understand where the cape comes from. To me, the cape means is stranger than the colors. Because no, did anyone on Krypton have a cape?
Nope.
Okay.
Just remember what Edna Mode said about cape.
Oh,
exactly.
That's right.
Well, actually, wait. The chamber people had capes. Or they had some kind of cloaky thing.
Well, the other thing...
Well, also, where did he get the proper size? They didn't, like, pack the proper size.
Now, John, unstable molecules.
Oh, well, okay.
Marvel, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, the Marvel, DC...
Same difference.
No, you know what it is, Serv? Basically, like, in the 90s, Marvel sold off the movie rights to Unstable Molecules, and they sold it to New Line, and New Line was absorbed by Warner Brothers, and thus Warner Brothers has them.
Well, okay, you want to get into a nerd fight? The Hobbit Part 2 fucking sucks.
Whoa.
It's not The Hobbit. It?
Whoa.
It has nothing to do with the goddamn book.
Whoa.
Fuck them.
Okay, first of all, A, I'm not done trashing Superman. Two, I'm like, you've seen it?
I saw the trailer, yeah. It was in Superman.
No, I've seen the trailer too, but you're...
No,
really?
I will tell you from the trailer, it's not The Hobbit.
Okay.
The only part that's The Hobbit is damn Smaug.
No, I know, because see, in The Hobbit, well, what they've done was they cobbled three movies out of one book and a paragraph from Return of the King's appendices.
Right.
You know, for the battle of whatever Woodset is.
And I really actually hope I am spoiling somebody for The Hobbit if you're listening to this. There's no female goddamn elf in The Hobbit.
whoa, sexism.
There's no Legolas in The Hobbit.
The Supreme Court said it's okay.
Wait, is Orlando Bloom back? Was that him?
Yes.
Yeah, that is him.
Yes.
Okay. Has he had surgery? Because that didn't look like him.
Well,
they're probably trying to make him look younger. Young.
Yeah, they made him look younger and younger than he was in Lord of the. I'm so upset. Sorry, I'm just very, very. Sorry. Now to go back to trashing Superman. Sorry.
So Widge though.
Yeah.
Let's take out the. I know it's hard to take it out, but. Let's take out the God machine and you know the MacGuffins. I think that the story.
So basically, you take out the whole third act. Okay, go ahead.
Well, sort of. the way that they showed, and this hasn't been done in any of the Superman films.
Mm.
In the comic books, of course, it has been. But
right.
But what they showed in the comic. In the movie, I thought was an excellent story. Maybe you said the first two acts were excellent. And I mean, the fact that you saw him struggle with his powers growing up, which has always been sort of that, you know, the one thing that nobody really, it's not like all of a sudden, you know, he just knows how to control his X-ray vision. Spoiler alert.
Right. Yeah. That sequence was really cool.
Oh, it was awesome. Yes, actually, every single one of the flashback scenes were fantastic. My son said, I thought it was going to be more about him growing up. And it's like, well, you know, they show that. I mean, they showed enough of it. And it's kind of him trying to find his way in the world, I thought was an excellent story. Now, of course, you at some point, you do have to have a battle because it is a Superman film. So, and what I liked about this, too, is that there was no kryptonite. I mean, there was sort of, but there really wasn't any... You know, and no one was going around trying to find, you know, some kryptonite to cripple Superman, because of course it is his only weakness. But I'm sorry, you're not singing kryptonite, are you?
I was singing Pocket Full of Kryptonite.
Okay, well, I'll give you the Spin Doctors. Okay,
thank you.
Better than was it Door? What the hell they're called? Nickelback, right? No, Anyway, whatever. Yeah, so no, I think that the story that they told, and I guess you are right, that the whole gravity machine thing sort of now in hindsight doesn't make any sense. But in the movie, well, when I got to the point, I was sold by it. I mean, I was sold that this was what they were going to do. This is how they were going to do it. But I think that they did a great job of setting up what could hopefully be a new franchise. And I don't know if it's made enough for them to say, okay, we're going to go ahead and green light number two or not. But for me, I thought it was set up very nicely. The only thing that I of course foresee as being a problem is that you're going to have to go to Lex Luthor next, right? You either got to go Lex Luthor or Brainiac, I guess, probably if you're going to
go. The one thing I saw was that you've first of all, you had a couple of appearances of LexCorp there.
Right. Yes, you did.
I would almost say go with Brainiac next, because the technology that they've established from Krypton would be kind of awesome to see as some version of Brainiac, which you could go with. I don't know. I'm thinking more of the whole floating skull with tentacles version versus the Silver Age green version.
Right, right.
They've set up a really neat Brainiac.
Yeah, I think you could do that. But I see where you're coming from. My problem is that I just was trying to, I don't know, I was trying to follow it and get into it, and I just kept getting knocked out of it. Like I said, I was fine. The third act, I think, is what really tossed me on my ass. Because, like, for example, the other thing I mentioned was you had that whole extended sequence of Perry White and the other two people trying to seek safety, okay?
Yeah, that's good.
First of all, I think it's amazing they waited so long to get out of the building.
That wasn't real bright.
And you had people everywhere, just people standing around everywhere, except where the three of them were. And I'm like, well, how is it that you have extras everywhere, but right here? At least show me someone running away in the background. It's almost like Lawrence Fishburne was like, I don't want anyone else on the set. I mean, it's like, come on, this is stupid. There would be people there.
It just needed to be him and his earring. That's all. That's all it needed to be.
I didn't even mind the earring.
Yeah.
You have to understand, Lawrence Fishburne saved me from the movie Predators. He actually made that worth sitting through. So I'm good with Lawrence Fishburne. But the other thing is that talking about the extras, you have a fight that it's like spanning cities. First of all, you can't tell if it's spanning cities because it's so blurry. But my assumption is you're fighting over the whole fucking planet. You have a jackhammer hammering the planet. Okay. How is it that there is anyone anywhere who is standing calmly around so that when your Kryptonian ass flies through a building and lands in front of them, they are just like, what? Something's happening? How is that fucking possible? And how is it that I actually be bored enough to think of that when there's a fight going on? Oh, it's,
you know,
because
why
I can't see anything. Why?
Because some people got nerves like serve.
He gets a point. Point to serve.
Oh, my God. That is fucking amazing.
Oh, shit.
That is...
Aaron, yay.
Drunk Robo Aaron. That's
drunk
the most
Robo Aaron.
That's even better.
That's the most appropriate use of that soundbite ever. But
it was way late, but yes.
No. Now, sir, you have to admit, though, that it's not that common.
I agree. It's very rare.
Yeah,
it is hard to find somebody that, you know.
Stoned. Stoned is the word you were looking for.
The strength of character.
Stoned was the word you were looking for.
I was starting another word with an ST sound.
Stupid?
Oh, well.
Anyway, so
oh, stout. Stout. That's the word you're looking for.
that means they can't run, John.
Stalwart?
I'd like a stout.
I'm having a summer shandy.
Me too.
Lining Kugels?
No, Sam Adams.
Oh, okay. No, I'm having the Lining Kugels.
I have a porter.
Yay!
That's kind
and
of
she also has a beer.
What we're having.
I know.
And John, what are you having?
Nothing right now. In fact,
which?
Iced coffee.
I also have a Sun-Kissed tin.
No, just straight up, you know.
Okay.
Diet and stuff.
Gotcha.
Yep. Good man.
So would you tell people to see in the theater or not?
I would say if they are a, Superman fan, it's worth
actually,
seeing.
The Superman fans are the ones that are complaining the most, but go on.
Like a matinee. And see, why are they complaining? The problem with it was not that it was a bad Superman movie. The problem was that it had bad movie problems. Like the sort that you go, you spent way too much money on this for this to be here, you know? So what are they complaining about besides the whole Zod fight end?
That's pretty much it.
That's a big part of it, but aren't they also complaining about the, this is kind of a spoiler, but the twist with Lois and Superman?
Oh, that she's a guy?
Yeah, and that he's a girl.
Yeah, go with that part, yes. Yeah. And also, some people are complaining about, is it Jimmy Olsen's sister at the planet, or is that supposed to be Jimmy Olsen as a girl now? The girl Perry was trying to say, that's a complaint.
Because
supposedly her last name is Olsen.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Was she Jane Olsen or something?
Jenny Olsen.
Jenny?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
Well, she's only listed in the cast list as Jenny.
There's something I saw.
Novelization? Something. Yeah,
something like that.
Oh.
Hey, I hate to do this, guys, but I got to get off the computer. We're having a pretty serious lightning storm.
Really?
Oh, shit.
Hi.
I'm not here. I'm not over here. I'm not too far from you.
I know, but I mean, every six seconds, we've got a lightning strike, and it's too intense right now, I think, to have these cans on my ears waiting to get electrocuted.
Plus, you want to go stare out the window, right?
I want to go take a hit. I want to go stare
out. He wants to go stand outside with an umbrella.
All right.
Golf club.
That's what it was.
There you go.
Here's the thing. Most men that get electrocuted are actually fishing.
Oh,
not golf.
Stand outside with a fishing rod.
Sir, for God's sake, don't go fishing.
Yes. Okay, I'll try and remember that. It's been great talking to you guys. And before I split, I will say for Lee, I am looking forward very much to Anchorman 2 and not Hobbit 2. So they come out about the same time. So
I would tell everybody to put your money in Anchorman 2.
Absolutely, December 20th.
Not just
kids.
Your money, ladies.
Ladies. All right, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Sorry I have to cut it out quick here.
Bye.
But,
no worries. We'll talk to you later, man. Bye.
See you guys.
All right. So,
well, now that he's gone.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And now John will be gone soon because they don't live far from each other.
Well, but he's in the Unique Geek bunker, so.
That's
right.
So, yes. But no, I mean, I'm confused about why Superman fans would be pissed at the film, because I thought for like rebooting a franchise, it did a good job. I just wish it had been smarter in some of its plot elements. And like I said, the memory stick thing really fucking bugs the shit out of me.
It bothered the shit out of you, didn't it? It really did.
Really, that's that's your pivotal thing. That's the thing that all this pivots on. Really.
I gotta push things in hard.
Oh,
okay.
Boy.
Oh, crap. I didn't say that out loud, did I?
I just got a crackle as well. Hold on.
See, that's why you have to properly seat things.
Weather. Let's see if I'm under weather alert of some sort.
No, and so then trailers you're seeing. I cannot wait to go see Despicable Me 2 because it looks adorable. You're gonna be so cute.
Okay, so can we switch gears a minute and do a book club review? Because I know, yeah. Lee, you finished Neil Gaiman's Ocean at the End of the Lane. Did you not?
Yes, I did.
I finished it, too, as well, over the weekend.
I have not started it.
I'm in a tornado warning.
I finished it waiting on him to sign it, actually. That tells you how long
did
we were there.
Did you tell him, hey, I just finished it. It's really good.
No, we actually talked about the fact that my 14-year-old had just bought his first edition of Sandman and whether I was a good parent or a bad parent.
And the verdict.
He said good parent.
Good.
So I'm going with that.
Because he's the nicest man in the whole world. And Lord really knows, I know all about the dark side that I can pick out really good people. People that are genuinely good, and he is one.
Well, I will give you that he is genuinely good because he probably signed four people at least 1,500 books. And my understanding is did not take a break from when he started till the last person left. And for every person, he was actually talking to them, looking at them. Now, you didn't have a lot of time. I mean, it's 30 seconds, but was looking at them, talking to them, and was generally nice.
And well, I've met him like three times, so I'm good.
Well, and
What?
I'm watching this scroll because of the weather, lightning strikes.
Okay. Not laughing at
Ron, No. Here's the reason why. Okay. Some hair reported in parts of St. Petersburg with these heavy thunderstorms. Some hair reported.
Oops.
Wow.
Just let me know if they start doing Jesus Christ Superstar, because that would be really awesome.
Uh-huh.
I need to get a capture of this.
So anyway,
I've met him like three times and he's done that. You know, that he always makes sure that he does give, you know, whatever FaceTime he can get. Plus he signed what, 450? If you missed out on the Atlanta thing, which I did, you know, you could actually order a signed book.
Well, he signed beforehand more like 700.
Wow.
Of which I think 450 are left.
Right, like 200 people had the option if they did not care about getting it personalized, you could just pick that, trade in the book you had in your hand,
mm-hmm.
and get one that he had pre-signed, and that was fine.
Right. And what's amazing is, because I mean, Need Coffee was a sponsor, so I was, you know, back
you guys
basically
are awesome.
Helping me trying to help get people in to see him, but what was what I always find amazing is that his memory for people is astonishing. I mean, not because people would come in and he would introduce them to each other and be able to say what they did and how long he'd known them and just like,
wow.
And the fact that he remembers me, I mean, I'm me. Okay. I'm a schmo. All right. And he remembers me is like astonishing. I'll never forget when I went up to him after the North American premiere of Princess Mononoke at San Diego, back wherever it was. And I had seen him before at like World Horror Con. And he was like, oh, hello, Widget. What is, you know, at the time I was writing for Coming Attractions. He's like, what is Coming Attractions going to think about it? And I'm going, how the fuck do you remember who I am?
Because his mind is a steel trap.
Well, I've got to say he was a great speaker.
Oh,
he really was. This is the first time I'd ever heard him, and he is a wonderful speaker.
He is an awesome, awesome speaker. Okay, you hear our podcast, and we're all whatever. I mean, we're comfortable with each other. We can do our decent amount of banter. But when you hear him on interviews, he's got none of that. He is like a stream of consciousness that never ends. And I noticed this in a documentary, and it was about Lovecraft, and they were talking to him.
Which is a great documentary.
It is. And they had Brian Lumley and Ramsey Campbell also in this. And when you see all, you know, they'll go back and forth. When you notice how each one talks about Lovecraft and you hone in on Neil Gaiman, because there's no break. this guy doesn't do the whole, you know, that sort of thing that you'd need editing. There's no editing almost on Neil Gaiman. It's the man is amazing. And he's like the nicest. The last time I saw him was he was editing. He was the editor, guest editor for Best American Comics. And he came after Linda Barry, who was good. You know, she came out of the hole. She knew Matt Groening and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was in, you know, Village Voice and stuff with her little Edna comic. And he wasn't really happy with her issue, you know, her editing. And he said it in such a nice way that if you were going to get criticized about your work, you have Neil Gaiman do it because.
Yeah.
It almost doesn't sound like
criticism. I can see that. I can see that. I mean, I was really impressed.
And I swear to God, he could take over the mantle of, you know, of Ray Bradbury easily.
Wow.
I really do as far, you know, because I finished this book and I've read a bunch of his short story work and he handles, I mean, which, you know,
yeah.
Dealing with a short story, you know, formula is so difficult. You know, most people jump to, you know, long fiction and stuff.
Right.
That doing a short story is really, really difficult. And I was trying to explain this to my neighbor who's a writer, you know, because he had me look at one of his stories. And I'm like, well, this seems like it's a longer story, that it doesn't seem like a typical short story. I said, you need to read these people on how they handle a short story. And he does handle different variations of different, you know, he does urban fantasy really well. He could do a regular story and you would still.
Well, and I thought what I liked about this book, it's, for want of a better term, this is a classic ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
In two very different ways. And it is a very interesting story when you read it. I think King has done it. I have not read enough of Gaiman to know he's done it before. I like that the protagonist is a child. I think there
it reminds me
very
of
interesting with that. It reminds you of.
It reminds me of like Peter Straub a little bit of how, you know, because there's. A little bit of
there's that some Straub feeling. I felt that there was a little bit of some of the good parts of it.
right.
The kids interact, some kid interaction in that, but, and kid thought processes.
Right.
Really got into that very well. And so it's a very good book. It is I am a fast reader, but it is a quick read. It is an enjoyable read. I think this is a great summer book. I really do. This is a great on the beach summer book. But yeah, you're only going to get in.
I didn't really see so much as a typical ghost story. And I don't know if it's because of, you know, I'm almost hitting my mid-century, as one would say. It's interesting how he taps in and he's, Neil's probably what, maybe 7 years older than me, maybe, I'm not sure, whatever. But it's sort of funny when he's hit on this thing. And for those of us that have dealt with funerals and stuff, it's interesting how he starts it off that
yes,
everybody has been there. You go, and there's no spoiler because it's the setup. And this is how great he is. And like I said, Bradbury can do the same thing. You gather people, you know, that you haven't seen. You're here. Everybody's here for the same thing. All of a sudden, people are, you know, who know you, you don't know them, are coming up to you. And it's like this whole flood of your memories are coming back and stuff. And that happens a lot, you know, that one little thing triggers something that you've forgotten about, you know, and it's an older person book.
I would agree.
It is, because even Neil has said this is not the graveyard book. No, what I meant was, I think somebody who's even older than 30s, and because we're living longer. I mean, it is, you know, dealing with life and death and stuff that I think older readers will take more out of it. You know, because after a while you become retrospective of, you know, what you've done in your life.
Well, now here's the question, Rox. Like, for example, with Coraline, I'm very jealous of people who are kids now and can read that and enjoy it for a spooky little story. But when I read it, being an adult, it scared the fuck out of me because I had an appreciation for just how much trouble she was in, which you wouldn't have an appreciation for as a kid, right?
I will tell you that the movie Coraline, and I've not read the book, the movie Coraline made me uncomfortable throughout the whole thing.
It is.
Let me finish the question. The question is, so do you think that like someone in their 20s could read The Ocean at the End of the Lane and then come back and read it later in life and have a different experience?
Yes.
Much like with Coraline. Okay.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oh,
completely.
Yeah.
And I think I've read it now and, you know, Kidlet was with us and actually enjoyed it a great deal. And now is reading Sandman and, actually said, can I read it? And my husband's like, you need to let mom finish it first. There is only one scene where there is anything what I would say is even slightly risque. So it's fine for him to read it. I think he is going to get a very different read and a very different understanding than I do. And I would agree with you, Rox. There is a very different story he's going to get than I'm going to get. And that's not a bad thing. I think that means it's good literature.
And, the thing is,
other books that I read now, I mean, that you see differently when you're in high school versus college versus your 20s versus your 40s.
And the interesting way he presents his prose is, yes, there is, you know, action and stuff. However, it's in the form of, you know, you can, even while you're reading it, you can still understand it's somebody looking back. There's a great line in it about how adults take roads and children take, you know, explore paths and stuff. You know, children are more likely to go off the path and it's a really cool thing of you like, oh, to me, it's like, it's never too late also, you know, to still sort of retain what you were. Because, and also he has this thing where basically the older you get, you still think of, you know, nobody really understands what you look like inside. And some people have, you know, still see themselves as a younger person type of a thing.
Well, there was an interesting thing that really, again, as I said, I liked that it was a young protagonist telling the story. And there were a couple of things that actually kind of made me grin to myself, only because it is something that kids do. There are a couple of scenes where they're walking barefoot and they're filthy and their feet are dirty and everything, but nobody's feet hurt.
No.
They might get a cut or something, but it's not a big deal. It's just more of your feet are dirty before you come in. We got to wash your feet. It's that kind of a thing. And think about when you were a kid, that was the issue. And it really reminded you again, you're really thinking about kids here. You're really thinking about kids. And there's a couple of scenes where you have to hold hands. He has to hold hands with somebody. And you're like, 7-year-olds do that. And they don't even think anything odd about it.
No.
And so just little things like that really kept you into the story where there could have been times when you could have tried to pull yourself out. But it is an engrossing story. I could not stop reading it. So,
and it's interesting if you compare him, because I'm reading Joe Hill's book still, The Nosferatu. So I sort of
read that too.
I like it. Whereas Stephen King, who's all, you know, awesome guy too, he makes sure that he sets up his world that it's almost concrete. Almost everything he's done, he'll describe the camphor tree that's out in front of somebody's house and that he actually builds everything in such a concrete way, which is really great. But it's sort of funny. Neil and I think even William Gibson do this really cool thing where they don't have to do that. You know, they give you a world that you pretty much, you know, they'll do give you the rudimentary descriptions and stuff, but mm-hmm. your imagination, he allows you to do most of the work, you know, most of the work of, you know, here's
how. But you know what, Rox? It's funny. I bet if you and I had to draw the farm.
Oh, it'd be totally different.
You and I would be drawing two completely different farms.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I mean, and that's not a bad thing.
No,
and that's
because
not a bad
again, you're going from somebody remembering this.
Right.
And the cool, and we won't spoil the ending, but the ending is cool because it also deals with memory and stuff.
Well, you probably do. I know I do this because I go home to a very small hometown and people remember me in a different way than I am now. And there is this feeling as I pass through that my town through the city limits that I'm that person. I'm that Lee again. Mm-hmm. Whether I want to be or not, I am. And then when I'm ready to go, I get to be the Atlanta Lee. I get to be this Lee. And there is a feeling of that. And I think this book kind of touches on that a little bit too, which is interesting.
Yeah, kind of. I was in sort of a larger city, small city type of thing. So we had 50,000 people in the city itself and then 100,000 around the whole. So I didn't really have that.
Yeah.
You know,
but I was in, you know, there are 10,000 in the county.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, but that's the difference. So I thought that was and again, I think that is very interesting in how he set that up in such a way that I didn't even realize he was setting it up until I really was thinking about it later.
Right. But I mean,
an interesting way to do that.
It is, because like when my dad passed away, all of a sudden people, you know, I knew from my neighborhood were showing up. It's like, you know, my adversary, Lisa, I won't give her last name, but you know, she showed up. It's like, hey, it's me, Lisa. I'm like, wow. You know, all of a sudden we're like friends,
all the people
and
yeah,
stuff.
Right.
And it's like, why, you know, people are coming up to you and it's sort of interesting. All of a sudden you're in this emotional state anyway. Same thing with the protagonist.
Yep.
But you're almost like out of it.
Well, you're
because
not
because of that.
Right.
You're there.
Not. Yeah.
So it works really well for this story to proceed because this person is in such a state, you know, that the walls, and I actually mentioned it, it's like that memory wall, which is relatively thick, becomes very thin. It's almost like Halloween, you know, where the walls of being alive and dead are so close that all of a sudden, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. The issue there is too, that the idea of what is a trauma and the issue of that it is very easy to really put traumas in a box that you don't open.
Right. Yes.
Or certain instances in a box that you don't open. And there is a terrible, terrible scene in this.
Oh my God. Which would be interesting. Well, just so we don't spoil it, but going back to what Widge said, it would be interesting if a younger person read this one scene and thought, you know, of what somebody who or somebody that has lived a scene such as that, that's really terrifying. That it's kind of funny. When I was reading it, I was going by the protagonist that's sort of looking from behind.
Yeah.
You know,
it's okay now.
Yeah.
Right.
So it'd be interesting on what somebody, a younger person's take on that, you know, where everything is relatively fresh and stuff, you know, that you have those younger person traumas. You know, opposed to you and I reading this and kind of relating to it. Oh, yeah, I remember the time when my sister was, you know, running after me and I like almost hung myself on our monkey bars. You know, I can say that, but it's like none of the trauma is there. None of the scrape marks, the weird feeling that you've been flung off the monkey bars because you just wrung your neck.
Right.
You know, something like that. It's like, I can retell that, but there's none of the immediacy.
Did you read the audiobook?
Yes.
Was him reading it?
Yes, he did. Yes. It's
well, he read chapter two. He read chapter two at the reading signing, and it was just absolutely amazing. It was hysterical too, because then he got tired of Doctor Who questions and he wouldn't answer them anymore.
Well, it's sort of funny. Certain authors can read their work. He can. Ray Bradbury can read his own work. Harlan Ellison can read his own work. I like Harlan's voice.
I really know. You do.
Stephen King, no.
Stephen has to do his short stories. He cannot do chapter.
All right.
Well,
yeah,
I do still like the readings he did of the first three books of the Dark Tower.
That's why I couldn't go on with those.
Well, because by book three, he was doing voices and he had it down. So, I agree with you. Book one, he was just like, it was obviously he just wasn't used to it. But by book three, he had it down.
Oh.
So, I do like authors reading their own stuff.
Uh-huh. And that's what I love about going to Dragon Con readings. Those are awesome. If you could, you know, for people who are going to Dragon Con, even if it's an author you don't know,
like me,
like Widge, go to one of the readings. They're an hour, you know, there's a Q&A afterwards, but they are a lot of fun. They really are. I caught Cory Doctorow here, and he was a cool. I mean, there are so many cool writers that'll read their stuff, you know. So catch it live at Dragon Con. There's my plug. So, but yeah, no, Neil Gaiman. He didn't do Anansi Boys. He had somebody else do it because it was South. You know, it was a Caribbean type accent. So he did not do that one, but he did Neverwhere as an audio.
He did Stardust.
Stardust.
He did do American Gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Did he? Because I had somebody else do that one.
I think there may be two versions of it. Wasn't there one that Lenny Henry did?
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's two versions, I think. I know he did Fragile Things, which was a short story collection.
Yes.
There's an audio collection out where he reads his children's books, except for Tuesday, which is new. But there's that. He's read a lot of his own stuff, which is good. Hearing him live or hearing him just read it is awesome.
So, you know, for you guys that saw him do you think this is going to be his last time of doing?
Well, what he said was that he basically the whole signing thing is the part that kills him. Now what?
Oh yeah.
Cause he's just, I mean, watching him sign was just ridiculous. It was crazy. But what I don't understand is if that's the problem, if your problem isn't signing, but like, the volume of signing, mm-hmm. then do something, cap it, you know, and cap the signings that are going to happen. Let people mm-hmm. come see you and then like charge more and like give part of it to charity so nobody can bitch at you. Right. And then you can still do stuff. Now, what he said was,
he does stuff for libraries.
Oh, yeah. He does stuff for the CBLDF all the time.
Yes.
But what he said was, is that for like his kids' books, he would still like do reading tours and stuff like that. But just for the signing part of it is, I think, what he's trying to get away from. So,
it makes sense. As we said, he was there for, I don't know how many people were there, which at least he signed for at least 1,000 people, which I would assume at least 2,000 books, if not more.
Wow.
He did like an hour reading and then a Q&A and then signed straight until 1:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And then they got out of there at 2 and they had to be in Florida and they were going by bus by 2 p.m.
My God.
So.
Well, yeah, and he did say the bus was cool because then he gets to sleep on the bus. So that was nice.
But still.
No, I'm not saying it was. No. Here's the thing.
As somebody who that does collect, you know, books and stuff, you know, high-end book, well, relative, mid-range, you know, collectability type books. It's almost a good thing that he doesn't do it, because, all right, if you do the math, if everybody brought, because I know one of the meth men, Holly, brought what? She had two items. So say, well, you had 1,000 people, everybody had 2,000, that's 2,000 items. That's 2,000 items that could be on the market.
Well, and he made it was very clear. He would sign any copies. He would only personalize one thing per person.
Mm-hmm.
He would sign as many copies of the new book as you bought.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would sign one other book.
That's
one
fine.
Book. And that was fine. I mean, you know, I brought my copy, which is dog-eared and old, of Good Omens. Got mm-hmm. him to sign that. I bought Crazy Hair for my niece. Got him to sign that. Kid Lit got him to sign The Sandman. And, you know, and then Kimmy could not go. She was sick. And so Tuffles was there. And we were like, we'll keep her book and get it signed for her. So right. That was kind of, you know, we kind of did that because Kidlet didn't care if he had one signed with his name. So it was fine. But yeah, I mean, you got to think at least every person had two things, right. If not more.
Right.
And that's a lot of signing.
That's a lot of signing. And, you know, you don't get that from anybody, you know, baseball, whatever, whatever. You know, you don't. You know, people can say all they want about, you know, geeks and stuff, but if you have fans and these are the people that help make you, yeah, you're going well beyond, you know.
Well, and I think that is, and that goes into geekdom, and it kind of goes into some other things, is when you are that kind of a fan and when they realize what it's been. Those are the people you like to talk to, whether they're authors, mm-hmm. comic book authors, actors, whoever. Mm-hmm. They get it. They yeah. get the only reason they're there is that. And those are the people that you, when you see them and you're like, I'll give you money. I don't care if I want your autograph or not. I'll give you money because I see how you treat other people.
Sure.
And that's been one of the big things. Don S. Davis. Nicest man in the world. Nicest man in the world. And he signed forever and he stayed there forever. Terry Gilliam. Not Terry Gilliam. Oh, Widge, why am I blanking on his name?
He's fantastic anyway.
Oh, he is fantastic anyway.
What, huh?
The Monty Python gentleman that came to Dragon Con.
Terry Gilliam.
Or the other one.
Terry Gilliam.
Oh.
Okay, Terry Gilliam. When he signed and signed and signed, and he was like, of course I'll sign, and I'll stay here until everybody has something signed if that's what they want. And those of you are like, thank you. You restore my faith in being a fan and being, you know, a geek about certain things.
Yes.
And that's good. And yeah. But I can also see, what I'd really rather go see him, and some people were talking about it, is when he goes to library things or things of that nature, and there's only like 100 people there. And he talks to everybody. You know, mm-hmm. he doesn't leave until everybody's gone. And I'm like, that would be kind of awesome.
Oh,
for something that you're a big fan of, yeah.
Like when he was still doing like Sandman and stuff, and I saw him, South Florida or something. I mean, it was like a handful of us. It was great. Yeah. You know, it was sort of funny. I remember the last time I saw him was a couple of years ago in New York, and I was staying with some people. It was Comic-Con, and I just, you know, I happened to look at my Twitter feed, and he's like, hey, I'll be at, you know, Union Square Barnes Noble. I'm like, oh, hey. So I called up my friend who I was staying with. I'm like, hey, do you want to go? And she's like, you know, Neil now belongs to the world. I'm fine. I've met him X number of times. I don't have to anymore. And then, honestly, I have other stuff going on. I would have loved to have gone to the Decatur thing. Really would have, because, again, mm-hmm. hearing an author live. But it's like, I've already met you. I don't really, you know, let somebody else go. You know,
yeah, and
the way I see it, I sacrificed my spot for somebody else.
Well, you sacrificed your spot for Kidlet, in all honesty, because Kidlet absolutely now finally will read Graveyard Book, which I had been trying to get him to read for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden realized this is the guy that did Coraline, so now he wants to read that, and now he's reading Sandman. So this kind of made me go, oh, thank you, Jesus, that, you know, he's now getting into some other authors that don't make me as irritated as some of the other authors he likes. And he likes some very good authors, too. I'm just glad he's reading. Seriously, I don't care that it's comic books. Reading isn't the important thing. But some of the authors, I'm like, oh, thank you, God. Please, let's read something else. So that was good. So, yeah, no, it was really, really good. And I just, you and I think people have heard this. I read the book. Mm-hmm. Very good book. It's a good summer read. It's not going to kill you.
It's real quick. It, you know, for a sit. Well, what? It's like if you read through it in a sitting or so, it's like 5 hours or something like that.
Yeah, probably. And I want to read it again because I want to a little more savor it.
Mm-hmm.
Do that a little bit. But yeah, no, it's great. It's a good book.
Yeah.
It's a good book. It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
So, yay. And then, oh, Warehouse 13. Sorry. Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of took a little turn there. Very interesting.
So is that the end? Was that the end?
No, we got a couple more.
Really? Holy crap.
Anthony Stewart Head being on it. It's kind of cool. Yeah. Without glasses, like, it took me a second to recognize him.
What do you think of the psychiatrist? Wait, you know what? Did we get Lindsay Wagner anytime this season? Not yet. All right.
Well, in the first part, yes. But then, you know, already broke
it's
up.
It's this whole, I know. Yeah. Well, he kind of broke up with her.
Yeah. So we had the big, well, she didn't break up with him. So right. We have not had her, but I thought it was great. And it's been very good, and Defiance is continuing to make me want to watch it. Oh, I'm not sure it's the greatest show there is, but I keep turning in. I keep tuning in, and I keep watching it.
That's good.
And I'm being surprised that I'm doing that, because it's not a show that I would usually... I don't think it's a show I would usually enjoy, mm-hmm. but I am really watching it. Although, honest to God, if they do not swap the hours for them and put Warehouse on at 9 and Defiance on
at
10.
Yeah, that is a weird thing. Because the thing is when you consider network television has Hannibal at 10. And I do not rank Warehouse with a 10 o'clock show.
No, Warehouse
even though 9 o'clock maybe. It's a 9 o'clock show. And the thing is they did a really cool thing with the whole, confessing your sin thing, which was really good. That was some good acting on Eddie McClintock on that. You know, because it's like, well, and it's sort of weird that what he confessed to me was more like a 9 o'clock thing, but I can see the gravity of it. It's like, okay, you break your friend's legs. It could have been worse. So it's like, at first I'm like, well, he just broke his legs, but then I'm like, oh, to me, it's like, okay, you just broke your legs, but it could have been worse. So you live with it could have been worse for the rest of your life.
He broke your legs and replaced them with aardvarks.
Yeah. So
gets me though is this, there is a lot more adult. I mean, there is much more prostitution. First of all, is prostitution. Whoa. There is sex.
Whoa.
Drug use in defiance.
Lee. So they broke his legs and replaced them with prostitutes?
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
Are you sure you're not describing copper?
Well, that might be copper. That would be copper, actually. Yeah. Break the legs, put a little tiny prostitutes on there. That would be copper.
That'd be creepy.
That show is... I can't even watch it anymore, John. Every time I try to watch copper now, I'm like, okay, too much. I'm done. Yep, wow. All right, bye-bye. Yeah, too much. No, but... Defiance is much more adult, and that it is on as the 9 o'clock hour show. Just sci-fi. What the hell are y'all thinking?
Well, wow. You know, they did put The Following on at 9 o'clock. Which?
Oh, they did?
Did you finish watching it yet?
Not yet.
Never mind. No story for you.
I cannot wait. You are building up this story, and it better be a damn good story.
It's going to be amazing.
Hannibal. It better be a damned amazing story.
Well, see, Lee, what happened is he got rid of his Samsung phone and he replaced it with a prostitute.
No, I replaced it with a copper.
Actually, that might be cheaper than a Samsung phone and more reliable.
Well, either way, you're getting screwed.
Probably less full of STDs.
Two cans and string work well too.
Whoa, two cans, as in the birds?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
You know, because they can mimic human voice. It's just like the Flintstones when they used to use the birds on the shells.
You guys will know this. Okay, the story Blade Runner was built from. Which story is that?
Androids dream of electric sheep?
Thank you. All right. So in that story, at the end of that story, and if this is a spoiler for you, go read a damn book. The end of it, she goes and gets him like a fake cat, right? Fake cat?
No.
All right. What story is it where she goes, the wife, are you sure it's not about Decker?
A fake cat?
What are you talking about?
All right, there's a...
About pussy.
What are you doing?
Okay, there is a book, and maybe I'm thinking of the wrong book. There is a book where the guy has... You can have real sheep or fake sheep, and your neighbors don't always know you have fake sheep, but it's better if you have real sheep.
Okay,
In my neighborhood, Lee, fake sheep are better.
Lee, I was under the impression, it's been a while since I've read it, but I don't think there was actually sheep.
There was no sheep.
Can I just say this? Fake sheep don't tell any tales, so they're actually better to have her.
That's what the hell book did I... Never mind. It's a classic sci-fi.
Is this some weird Aardman thing?
What jogged your memory for this?
I brought this up is that at the end of this story, the wife is trying to make her husband feel better, and she buys him a fake cat. Which is just that it's basically a robotic cat. And I saw today on TV that we are now living sci-fi because there is the fake parakeet that you can buy, two of them for $19.99 with their own little stands, and they're like motion activated and they move their head and they move their tail and
So wait a minute. So Lee, your point is that you can buy a fake cat to try and kill your fake parakeets?
No, not really.
Or that she's trying to rebuild the tiki room. One or the other.
I really want a tiki room.
But wait a minute.
Lee, are you sure it's sheep? Because I'm just looking at Wikipedia, and it's always true, always right. He finds a toad, and the wife thinks it's
the toad. Yes. Aesthetic. Yes.
Okay.
Wait.
It's been a while since I saw this.
Yes. Thank you.
Wait, is this some fucked up sci-fi version of Wind in the Willows?
No,
it's Toad and Frog.
Oh, okay.
Right. And he thought he had a real thing, but it died, and I don't remember.
Wife? What?
Are you having thoughts about your own humanity at the moment?
He thought he had a real...
I find it very funny that we are now on TV talking about fake birds, and it's better to get a fake bird because it doesn't make as much mess.
Lee.
What?
This is a podcast. We're not on TV.
I know.
Well, TV earlier.
Rox, I'm worried about Lee's humanity at this point. I don't know what the fuck's happening.
I don't either.
All of a sudden, she's mistaking sheep for parakeets.
I know.
I'm so lost. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. All right, leave me alone.
So Hannibal ended, and now we have Under the Dome.
All right.
I know.
So I have not watched it yet. How did you like it?
Which one?
Under the Dome.
Let me do Hannibal first.
Okay.
I'll do it. Yeah. There you go. I liked it. I don't see it as true to the whole mythos that Wolven sees as, you know, the whole Thomas Harris thing. To me, they're similarities, but you know, in name only, because I kind of do miss, you know, Anthony Hopkins' portrayal as Hannibal Lecter, because I remember in an interview, now he played against Katharine Hepburn in A Lion in Winter.
Right.
And he used her cadence to come up with the vocal, you know, his vocal qualities for Hannibal Lecter. And I do miss that in the series that the lector we have, even though Mads Mikkelsen is really awesome, really interesting to look at, he doesn't have that je ne sais quoi that Lecter has, that sort of play on words and stuff. He's just sort of more standoffish. And I don't know if they're using that like, oh, hey, you know, we can always make him into the angry Lecter after we catch him. I think that might be part of it. So I have a question, though. It would be really interesting if it wasn't renewed. I wonder if they found out, okay, we're not being renewed, if they would have it end in a way that he gets caught. We're here, you know, basically he pins all of the murders pretty much on Will Graham. And it's really good. It's interesting. It culminates very in a loud, quiet way, if that makes any sense. It's like here's things piling up, and you're waiting for like insane noise from somebody saying, I'm not the killer, blah, blah, blah. But it ends in a quiet way, which is interesting because in the portrayal for Silence of the Lambs, you know, Clarice Starling goes down, you know, the corridors, and it's a simple scene of him just saying good morning. You know, that sort of quietness, you know, that holds back insanity. So on a whole, I really liked it because it had this cinematic look. And this is why I'm bringing this up, to bring up Under the Dome, is NBC gets it. You know, that we're talking about the cinema quality that cable TV has been bringing to shows. You look at the small town settings that Walking Dead has. And you know me, I'm a very visual person as a graphic artist and artist and stuff. You know, I notice these things. They stylized Hannibal really well, that it's drawing just to look at. You know, you can almost shut off the volume and just watch it. You know, Terry Gilliam was another one who's somebody that can do that. You know, you can watch Baron Munchausen with no sound and it's great to watch. However, Under the Dome, I was not impressed with. And what is it? Steven Spielberg is executive producer of this. Is that right? Anybody?
Yes, okay. That is correct.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
All right. Here,
no, I just remember them saying it.
Here you have a scope of a small town, and it doesn't have that. It's really weird. Have you guys noticed, like, you can almost pick out what shows belong to what network? You know, it's like CBS seems like it spends the least amount on set designs and stuff. It's like, apparently, instead of doing a town in Maine, they filmed it somewhere in North Carolina, which,
well,
could be
CBS
anywhere.
CBS still is one of the few that does most of their TV shows actually on their property still.
Right.
So they actually have that movie lot, as it were.
I know, but it always looks, you know,
looks the same. I agree. Yeah.
Here is, you know, who read Under the Dome? I did.
Started it. I never finished it.
I saw the Simpson movie.
I haven't finished.
Again, it's the Stephen King world building. And he builds a small town that you could actually, you can practically map out while you're reading the damn thing. And it just doesn't have that kind of quality that you would expect, that, you know, you would think that Spielberg would be like, oh no, we need to do this and this. They had some cool special effects, but not so much. It's like, it's almost like they're setting up the typical, you know, trope of a, you know, a mini series where it's like, okay, well, here's our budget. I don't even think they filmed it in widescreen, which TV shows are now being filmed widescreen. Or letterbox,
well,
practically.
Aren't they only thinking of this as a one season thing?
Well, it's almost like Golden Years. And to me, it almost feels like they use the same director as Golden Years, which I did like, even though they changed, you know, after
I liked Golden Years too.
You find, you know, they changed the ending, you know, from the first run of it. But it has that kind of, you know, it's filmed with, you know, video camera type, you know, you want something more, I think. I think as viewers, we want, you know, because, you know, you see, I won't even say HBO and Showtime because they have the budgets. You know, AMC, you know, they're working on budgets. FX, working on budgets. But their stuff looks great. You know, as watching shows, they look good. You know, and it just, they set up the whole scenarios of who was who. And it's like they rushed it. It's like, so I have it on record. I don't think I'm going to really spend a lot of time on it, you know. And I enjoyed the whole, if you want to see the destruction of a town, you know, people, watch The Mist, you know, because it's quick, dirty, you know. Actually, it was, and unfortunately, we lost Richard Matheson. And Richard Matheson in...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's sad thing.
Yes, in I Am Legend said, you know, humanity lasts about two dinners before it all collapses. Something like that. You know, that your humanity and stuff just, you know, after you've missed two meals and you don't know where your meals are coming, you know, basically, you know, civilization is gone. And, you know, if you want something like that, watch The Mist. You know, don't deal with the, you know, under the dome. Here's the funniest line, and I saw this. It's so funny. This, the town gets separated, dome comes down, this brother and sister are talking, they're like, well, where's mom? And he's like, oh, well, mom went out with Uncle Steven, get this, and she's having brunch at Denny's. Okay, who has brunch at Denny's? Nobody!
Nobody has brunch at Denny's, man.
It's like wrong people. I'm like, really? You writers? You don't know that you don't have brunch at Denny's? There's no mimosas at Denny's? I had to laugh when I heard that. I'm like, holy crap. And several other people picked that right up, too. It's like, so out of touch, writers. So, Lee, when I go to Dragon Con, we should take brunch at Denny's sometime.
I think if we go to Dragon, there are many better brunch places.
I know. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You don't do – there's no brunch at Denny's.
No.
Crazy.
Well, I will say this, that if you didn't know where your third meal was coming from, you would make brunch at Denny's.
All right.
No, that's true. That is true.
But then,
to be fair,
you make it a grand slam.
Yeah, well, but to be fair, Lee, because she always comes prepared, could have mimosas at Denny's because she's got a flask.
Oh, heck yeah!
All right,
it's not tough.
So I guess
if you pre-mixed your mimosa, it would go flat, wouldn't it?
No, you don't pre-mix it. You just bring the champagne in.
Okay.
So,
but you have to have fruit top champagne, so it's not as good.
I guess what I'm saying is that, folks, if there is some sort of apocalyptic thing, make sure that you're friends with both Rox and Lee, because one will keep you fed and alive, and the other one will keep you drunk. So
there you go.
That's right.
Hells to the yeah.
Yes.
Good job.
So I would say save your summer hour and pass. I hate to say it on the whole. I mean, the thing is. You know, Stephen King writes off on this stuff. I mean, I don't know how much, you know, feed he's giving this at all, you know. So
what, how much money he's getting from it?
No. How much input and stuff?
In some of the early stuff, supposedly he was pretty involved.
Right, but I meant like this one. And I'm amazed
in this one, he was supposedly pretty involved.
He's an executive producer. Two, the guy who developed this is Brian K. Vaughan, the guy who did Ex Machina and Why the Last Man for DC Comics.
And a ton of other stuff.
Most notably
Heroes as well. He's involved.
You know, it's like in the book, going back to Stephen King, it's like right after his accident, he came out with The Cell, and I loved The Cell because he actually wrote it almost like a comic book you know, writer would. It's like, bam, here is action. You know, first chapter. You know how he always does the slow build up?
Not in that one. No.
Not in this one. It's like, bam. And he kind of did this with, you know, he did a little bit of setup and then here's the dome and everything is just going crazy. And here it's like this typical, we need to set the pilot. Oh, here's your sheriff. He's got a pacemaker. Oh, here's, you know, it's just like really, you know, it's like, we're not stupid. You know, certain, you know, TV shows get who their, you know, audience is. And it's sort of funny going back to Hannibal. The people who are the showrunners of that show didn't have to dumb that show down at all. I mean, they knew who their audience was without it's like, here's the show. And it, certain stuff worked and certain stuff didn't, but it was a really good show of building up characters and stuff. But this one, it's like, they're just setting up the pieces. It's like, okay, here you go. You know, it's, I was not impressed with the first episode at all. I'm like, okay. I'm already doing something else. So you lost.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that was a part of Under the Dome is, first of all, it's one of his bigger books. It literally is as big as The Stand, expanded edition.
Yeah.
And it, when I saw it, I was like, I'm not sure I can do this again. And I started reading it and it actually starts that slow. And it was one that I literally got, I think, about 3 or 4 chapters in, and I've constantly like kept trying to move forward, and it's been
really
tough.
Oh.
Yeah, it's been very tough for me on this one. Oh. Which is unusual for me, because usually Stephen King's, I'm right in, I'm throwing them down. I haven't, Widge, have you read the next one in the Dark Tower? The one between the two that he put out just recently?
No, I have not.
I have not either, and it's because I'm trying to like go, what, you already broke my heart with the Dark Tower in some way, so I'm not, I still
I didn't
know
like
I'm
his Duma
happy.
Key. Duma Key was, I think, his worst book.
Duma Key was unusual.
I hated that book.
Well, you're an artist. I bet you would hate it.
No. The idea of the whole art thing didn't bother me. It was certain other stuff that bothered me. It was like, you know, his interchanging of this guy that kind of knew Spanish but really didn't. The dialogue was crap. And it's like, here's a guy who worked New York construction and all of a sudden knows everything about Lovecraftian mythos. It's like, I don't buy it. Sorry. You know, where he didn't set it up that, you know, and Stephen King loves to do backstories on people. He didn't have that for this guy. It's like, bam, I already know everything to know about, you know, the deep ones and stuff. It's like, really? Really? So, no, I didn't really care for. I mean, it's the whole art thing was pretty good about getting into the mind of an artist. And somebody else that who can do that and write about artists. He did a close enough job to what Chuck Palahniuk did in Diary. Chuck does this thing where this person goes almost sort of like what Stephen King's artist did in Duma Key, whereas they almost go into this strange little trance thing. But it's interesting. Chuck actually describes stuff that, you know, like the smell of turpentine and stuff and the smell of paints, and brings that up. And if you know painting and stuff, that stuff just floods in again, going back to Neil Gaiman, what your memory, you know, picks up on when, even when you're reading, all of a sudden you can almost smell, you know, a studio and stuff like that. So no, I didn't really mind the whole art part. And I hated the fact is he had this, which was really interesting, the Alzheimer's lady that had like one shard of, you know, telepathic whatever, but he didn't do anything with it. It's like, ooh, she would be the really cool, crazy lady, but did nothing. Oh, to me, it was a big mess. I didn't like it. So.
I think there are certain stories of his, and I actually put them in different piles, as it were. Duma Key is the summer read.
Mm-hmm.
It's the paperback you buy, you throw in the bag, and you read it on the beach, which might be because that's how I did it. The stand, the dark towers, the ones I sit with my tea and I, you know, take my time over. So I think he has those two kind of different ones. I think, Dolores Claiborne, a lot of them, Gerald's Game, a lot that he went through during that kind of period are those that you know, you do the paperback and you throw it in the beach.
Right. Bag. Yeah.
I can literally go through his books to me and be able to very easily kind of pop them apart that way. And then there are those that I just look at and I go, yeah. Okay,
wait, hang on. Is everyone sounding robo to anyone else but me?
No.
I sound fine. You sound fine.
I sound fine. Lee sounds right. fine. You all sound right, fine, actually.
Just checking. All right.
You sound fine to us. Yeah.
Let me see what's going on my end.
Rocks.
You sound and I right. actually hate to do this. I have an rocks. Early morning meeting tomorrow, but I've got to go.
Rocks.
So it's yes. just going to be you.
You sound fine.
Thank you. So do you.
Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Lee.
Yeah. Yes, John.
You sound mighty fine.
Thank you, baby. You sound good too, baby. And on that note.
No, you can't go yet because I still got something to send you.
All right, well, hurry up and send it to me.
Send it now. Send it now. Send it to her. Send her that parcel package you want to.
Someone. That's for a package.
I was trying to think of what I was
going to. Oh, my gosh, Lee, when are we going to get – you know what? So Lee Majors is coming to DragonCon. Why can't we get Lindsay Wagner? Oh, my God.
Lindsay Wagner is coming to DragonCon.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Never – you know what? I don't like that new website. It's weird.
Lindsay Wagner is coming to DragonCon, sweetie. Yeah.
Yay!
Yes. I know. I'm already begging for her for the Mega Warehouse 13 super panel.
Oh, my God. Well, that'll be okay. I want to see her with Lee.
Oh, I think that would be awesome.
Yes. Awesome.
I had my $6 million man toy and my Bionic Woman toy.
Wow.
My mom made me throw them out when I was little.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my mom did.
She made you throw them away?
Yeah, because, you know, you don't play with these toys anymore, so just throw them out. It was awful. My mom, oh, my God, the things I have thrown away. Like one of the early Barbie dollhouses. I mean, these.
What do you do? You just threw them in the trash?
Yeah, she would just grab them up and throw them away. She was awful.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, John is now sending me something else. I got to go read.
All right. Are you going?
All right. Let me go off and come back in because I'm still getting robo. Hang on.
You can go get off.
Oh, yeah.
Very
good.
Yeah.
Hey, John, after hearing you talk to the ladies, what else could I do?
Oh, babe.
You could go watch the ending of The Following, but that's,
That's his job for tomorrow.
Just me, maybe.
Okay. I don't have anything to recommend other than Neil Gaiman's new book.
There you go. It's part of the book club.
If you can, and if you want it signed by Neil Gaiman, there are copies.
Eagle Eye book or whatever. So,
and I think you can order it online and they'll, ship
you
it
can.
To.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Good night, everybody.
Answer my thing.
I said it was good. You weren't listening.
When?
John never listened.
Just a minute ago.
What about that other thing? Does that other thing make sense? Cause it seems lame.
That sounds fun. That would be great for the soundboard. I said it was good. You weren't listening.
Mm-hmm.
This is very good. I like it. Right. Send it in.
All right. Well, I'm sending it in. Then you're going to have to pull strings.
I'm going to do my best to pull some strings.
Everyone
hates
me.
But I will try.
I haven't heard anything. So you need to pull some strings for me or something.
All right. I'll try to do that. Hey, did we have the talk the other week when I was still having a fibro flare-up?
Oh, my God, you know nothing about sex? You're that old and you still don't know? Gosh, we had that talk years ago.
Do we have the other talk about DragonCon this year?
No, we haven't talked. You never called me back.
Well, no, you said you were doing the whole need coffee thing.
Yes, we did it last 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, okay.
Oh,
so just tell
that.
Me what I'm doing. It's fine.
I will, but when you call me back.
I will call you back.
God, you guys live in the same city. And
yeah, no, it's really damn sick. Hey, I invited him over for poker the other day, and he didn't come.
Well, it's poker.
Yeah, yeah, let's see. When was game night? Oh, that's right. The same weekend as gaming. Yeah. I wasn't busy.
I know. Sorry. Oops.
And it's poker.
Hey, poker's awesome.
I'm fine with poker.
Really?
All right. You got a poker to the E. And oh, okay. I'm leaving now on that really bad, bad parody. Bye, guys.
Or, all right. Which one do you know about poker? Are you good at it?
Not necessarily. I mean, I just like
to
play
it. What do you like about it?
I like the whole thing of trying to figure out what the other person has and if they're fucking with you or if they actually have something. It's that whole trying to read what's going on, you know?
You know what? I can do that at a grocery store and get just as much fun.
But see, Rox, that's your mutant ability. Us normal humans don't have that.
All right.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's.
I tried playing poker and I'm like, okay, I'm bored. All right. You guys aren't devious enough. If you want to fool somebody, I presented this. All right. We've been playing, my friends and I have been playing D&D on Thursday for years. Okay. And it's, and some of the adventures, it's the same thing. You know, you find your quest giver, you know, a man at a bar or whatever. You know, and it's like, oh, hey, you need to go do, you know, kick this guy's ass, get him off the land, blah, 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 whatever. And I'm like, I finally turned to some, you know, our group and I said, okay, time out. I will give somebody $20 to go down to the Publix and stand there and see if you can lure somebody on a quest at Publix. Because oddly enough, it works in D&D. I don't see why it wouldn't work in the real world.
So, but what sort of quest?
You know, well, oh, hey.
Like to go into the meat department or what?
No. Like, hey, my sister lost a statue over in the park that's right across the street. Can you go look for it? And see if somebody will do it. I mean, it works in D&D. I don't see why it wouldn't work here.
Okay, and see, Rox, your inability to separate reality from D&D is what made Tom Hanks go crazy in that movie.
No. I understand it. It's just going back to D&D, it's funny that, like, when I run Call of Cthulhu, it's hilarious because people bicker about doing stuff just like in real life. You know, it's like, oh, like one time I had them visit one person's mom who was in a sanatorium. Well, that the coworker went tagged along, but then they had to go visit the coworker's aunt that sent this mysterious telegram, you know, to come visit and then said, oh, don't come. But they went anyway. So they're arguing in a pantry with a monster about going to this place. Well, you know, what do you mean we're here? Your aunt said we didn't have to come here. Well, I went and visited your mom at the sanatorium. So they're arguing in front of a monster. I had to play that out because it was too funny.
Well, but Rock, to be fair, when you run a Call of Cthulhu game, it's funny because you're like correcting the Necronomicon. So,
well, yeah, there is that, but you know, I run it just for. But it's sort of funny. The problem with sometimes the D&D, you know, DMs, they run into the same trope of, oh, okay, go find the barman and go do this. And it's just like, okay, you need to shake it up. You don't need to keep doing that. And basically what I was saying was in our group was what you're doing is stupid because this does not happen in real life. You know, you don't go and find a quest giver at Publix. It was sort of an anti thing, you know. So it was my rebellion thing of, you know, how you're running your game without saying your game sucks.
Well, just like these days they have bank branches in Publix's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have quest givers in Albertsons, but because Albertsons closed.
Yeah. So
you can find them at Walmart though.
Oh yeah, there is a. You know what? There was a quest.
That's actually what the greeter is.
No, no, this is sort of funny. This whole quest giver thing. So, a couple years ago, I was at New York Comic Con, and I was wearing my gray top hat because it's like you can't, you know, leave that. You got to try. If you have a top hat, wear one in New York City, man. People will open doors for you. It's amazing. It's like magic. So I go to the Cloisters, place I hadn't been. You know, it's like one of those, I have never been there. I'm going to go. So I go in. It's all this really cool medieval building that they carted over from France or whatever. And one of the guards is like, wow, that's a cool hat. You need to go and talk to guard so-and-so. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, that reminds me of something. You need to go talk to him. So oddly enough, I took this quest from this man. I went and I found this guard. And I said, guard Bob said for me to come find you. And he looks at my hat and he looks at my attire because it was all steampunk, of course. And he's like, that's very interesting. He goes, you know, he goes, are you here for something? I'm like, well, it's Comic Con and this and that. I said, this is like Victorian, you know, outfit and stuff. And he's like, that is very interesting. And we were chatting. I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, and then I went on my way. I'm like, okay, I met with, you know, the wizard in the middle of the room, whatever. Went on and did my whole little tour thing. It was almost closing time. And I made up with this guard again. And he's like, you know, the way you're dressed reminds me of this artist that wrote this book. What is it called? Tilly and the New World or something like that. And he sent me on yet another kind of, this guy sent me on a quest to look for this artist who did this amazing pen and ink work of the 50s, 60s. The spidery kind of little hand-drawn elaborate stuff, and if you want, I'll send the post. But it's sort of funny. I had a quest in the museum. It was really kind of cool.
Did you take 2 damage or not take 2 damage? I'm not sure.
No, I got +2 on all reflexes for this.
So basically, you should get quests from buildings that came over from Europe, but not from grocery stores.
From, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or Walmart's.
Walmart's
are more like level 1, level 2 quests, though, right?
Okay, yeah, they are.
So would I, do I stand a better chance of getting a quest if I'm wearing a top hat? Or
a top hat.
Well, what if I was wearing a pith helmet?
Oh shit, I was just about to say pith helmet, John. Get out of my fucking brain.
I think we've just done maybe one too many of these podcasts.
The thing is with like, a
maybe
top
190
hat,
too many of these podcasts.
With a top hat, you know, people think you're somebody. They really do. I mean, I've now worn a top the last couple times I've worn really cool hats to Manhattan, and I'm you know, when you're younger, going back, it's like when we were living in when I was living in upstate New York and we would go down the city, you're like, I just want to wear jeans and this and that. And it's not until you get older that you're like, I want to dress like the people of the city. Why dress like a tourist? Because you'll just be part of the sheep. So you go out of your way to dress up because people will freaking notice you. I'm not kidding. Here's a city that has 1 billion people in it, a little less than that. And if you get a New Yorker that says, you look great, you know, this is a resident of their city and they bestowed upon you that you look great, you take that for all it's worth.
And you don't want to be a sheep, fake or otherwise.
No.
Because then Lee will be confused about you.
That's right. So, there's my fashion sense for the day.
So now, Rock, just to be clear, top hat good, stovepipe hat too much?
Oh, no. You know what? I would love a stovepipe hat. I knew this guy that had one. It's amazing. However, in old, if you look at some of the Dickens, Boz sketches and stuff, you have to like wear a scarf in a windy day because the thing will fly off and then you look stupid.
Well, now, and Rox, again, just to be clear, since you are the queen of steampunk, by stovepipe hat, I mean like the kind of thing Lincoln wore, an actual stovepipe on someone's head.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. I want the listeners putting stovepipes, actual stovepipes, on their heads and wondering why people in New York think they're fucking weird.
Right.
Okay.
Well, okay, getting back to one more thing on D&D. And it's sort of the weird thing. You know, you fight people.
Fight!
You know, and after you've killed them in this pretend world, what do? You loot the body.
Yeah.
So I presented this again. It's, you know, just being older and stuff. Because when you're younger, you just say, ooh, I got 50 gold pieces from this guy. You know, it's like, okay, I did a timeout. I said, okay, if we saw an accident, what is the time frame that if somebody's lying unconscious, that we can just rifle through their pockets and loot them? Right. You don't do that in the real world. And that was my thing. It's like, we don't do it. You need to shake this up because you don't go busting into somebody's, you know, house to steal their shit. You don't, you know, it's just, it's the weird thing about D&D sometimes. You know, I love the game. Don't get me wrong, but it's just like, but you don't do, yes, it is fantasy, but it's just like, if there was somebody lying unconscious in front of my house, it's like, I might wait a day to loot them.
Now, if they're unconscious for like a full day.
Full day.
Then something's real. That's a coma, you know?
That is, yes.
I think I'm not a doctor, but I'm just thinking that's a coma.
But it's just so funny. It's the same formula. You attack somebody, good, bad, whatever, and then you loot the body.
Rox, here's the other thing too, is that in a real world situation, let's be clear, you wouldn't just rifle through their pockets, you'd steal a kidney or two. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, if you want
more money.
I mean, let's be clear. So I think the main thing is for our listeners out there, don't take sleeping pills and pass out in front of Spaz House.
Yeah, it's because, you know, there's fake sheep. They might
graze on your hair.
Right.
On your real hair.
On your synthetic clothes that you're wearing, because we know you wear polyester.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's our demographic right there in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's funny how that is.
Yeah. So did either of you guys see World War Z, or am I the only unfortunate
sucker?
Oh,
was that John?
I called you a sucker.
You know, in my mind, it still should be done by Ken Burns. And you know, there's a really cool. I posted on Twitter. There's a really cool magazine article, New York Times magazine article. You know, that is a really cool article about Max Brooks. And it's interesting. He never wanted that how to survive the zombie apocalypse. He did not want that in a parody section. He knew his agent was doing that. Cause he's like, apparently this guy, you know, he is the product of, Mel Brooks and what's her name?
Name just his escaped mom.
Me. His mom.
Yeah.
Anne Bancroft. Yes. And apparently she had him late in life. So these are two people, two totally neurotic people, totally protective of him. I'm amazed he made it to adulthood. He actually enrolled in ROTC, during the whole Desert Storm thing. This is, you know, cool guy that he studied, history and stuff. So he came up to this as a very practical way of thinking about the end of the world type of thing.
Right.
And I still really would like, you know, a Ken Burns, you know, if we could be all, if a nation could be enthralled on, you know, watching a PBS show of still photographs with banjo playing and old-timey music and narration by some of the greatest actors going, World War Z could have been done the same way. Still photos of things going on and people just telling the story. I think it would have been great.
Well, what's great is that basically because you've got the audiobook, you could do that now. I mean, somebody could literally do that. But no, I mean, I would love to see that version of it. I still maintain that you do it like Sherlock and that you do two or three feature length TV films of each story with a different director. And you could have new stories based in the same universe because you could do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it, and what's sad is that, you know, as I said in my review, and I don't think I watched that one either, that the opening like half hour was pretty fucking harrowing. I mean, it was as long as you knew going into it, which it was pretty clear that it was not the book and it was just the name they were using.
Right.
Then it was a decent zombie flick.
Right.
Fast zombie flick, but a zombie flick. But but then it just went into like, what is this? What is going on? Like the moment you got to David Morse, and it's not David Morse's fault because I love David Morse, but his character is the one where you start asking again questions, like questions on the level of why would an alien society have not fixed this problem, you know?
Right.
Where shit just stops making sense and it's just, you know, Especially if you're going to completely gut the book that you've bought the rights to and change all the rules and everything and then not follow your own new rules, then I want to punch you in the throat.
Right.
Okay.
So, which is funny. It's like, so they took nothing from the book. Was it just name only?
No. Well, pretty much. I mean,
Okay. Because what I love about the, again, it's Need Coffee's book club. So we'll pass on and talk about the book. The cool thing I loved about the book is, yes, each one is, it's like little short stories, but it's the history. So you're looking back.
Yes.
Again, hearkening back to Neil Gaiman, we're talking about memory. I love the premise of how, now did they deal with the South America, you know, the organ trade?
They mentioned it, but they mentioned it passing.
Oh, because to me, amazing. That was harrowing.
That was fucking incredible.
As somebody who's reading, you know, all of a sudden, you know, your child's sick and, oh, hey, we got a kidney. Here you go. And all of a sudden your child's a zombie.
That was brilliant.
Oh my God, that was amazing.
I'd never heard of that before, but that and, Here is the movie in a nutshell. Okay, this has been mentioned in articles, so this is not a spoiler for the movie, and it's a very, very small point in the book, so it's not really a spoiler in the book. Okay, so in the book, one of my favorite things about the book is that they never, ever discover what happened in North Korea. North Korea went dark. All the people disappeared. They don't know what the fuck happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's never explained. They talk about it and they go, we don't know what the fuck happened. They still, the zombie Holocaust is past and they still don't know what the fuck happened. I fucking love that. In the movie, it's revealed that North Korea, because it's established that you have to bite in order to, you know, transmit the disease, just pulled the teeth of all their citizens.
Wow.
That is in the nutshell how the movie adapted the book, i.e. not at all. In fact, the cool shit they could have said, they could have easily, in the same space that you mentioned that stupid fucking thing about North Korea, you could have mentioned the cool thing about North Korea. They didn't.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, there were so many cool things about that book. I mean, there was a couple of the ones, it's like the blind samurai guy.
Yeah.
He was awesome. But actually, coming from here, you know, Max Brooks is American Jewish, you know, person.
Right.
I loved, if you wanted a story that could possibly, on a bigger scale, bring, you know, peace to the Middle East, is that section about, you know, Israel, you know, walling themselves in.
Which they did use.
right, with Palestinians and, you know, Israeli people. You know, because that story took, you know, was from the eyes of a young Palestinian boy or right. young man. And I'm like, wow, that is a great commentary. Mm. You know, I just thought that was, you know, if you wanted to see it on the grander scale of like what Gene Roddenberry would do about, you know, talking about stuff going on, it was a great story, that whole section. I also like the whole, to me, remind me of the book On the Beach. You know, the submarine.
Right.
You know, here you have zombies attacking a submarine and stuff, and they're just floating around, just trying right. to find a place to go.
Well, and, you know,
and go ahead.
No, I was just, the other harrowing bit of that was the, when the army was trying to stop that huge horde coming out of New York City.
Yes.
And how shit that went. Well, that was amazing.
Again, this is how brilliant this guy is a writer, because he delved into the psychology of one bullet, one zombie. And they had the cool spoiler on the book. They would always have train yes. mental people to find the signs of somebody who's firing, who's cracking.
Who's had enough and needs to stand down.
Exactly. And I'm like, that is freaking brilliant. And my thoughts were, does the military do this? You know, apparently not, because there was, you know, it was like shortly after I read that, then they had the suicides up in Fort Bragg and stuff. And I'm like, apparently they're not doing this. Well, why aren't they reading? But apparently Max Brooks has been lecturing seriously with this book, you know, to armed forces and stuff like that, you know, that they actually pay attention to what he has written in this book.
Well, and I mean, they are talking about killing so many zombies that they're literally, there's mounds of them. They would be in their formation with just dead bodies piling up in front of them.
Yes. Just, and then they have to like retreat a bit.
Yeah.
So that they can start another pile type yeah. of a thing.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
But no, the book is fantastic. And, there's so many good new ideas in there mm-hmm. that, you know, if you think that the zombie genre subgenre is just spent, then I'm like, no, read that book and you'll see
yeah.
there's plenty of room to fuck around with it. And
I mean, they even had that little village that was walled off, and it's like we're so used to, again, bringing up like the Under the Dome. Here, Max actually created a walled off city or town, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's killed each other. Nobody got on each other's nerves. Apparently, they made sure, you know, they had enough space that it wasn't, you know, like cats in, you know, five cats in a box.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you're fighting each other, you know, because they were able to survive for what, several years, and it worked.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, you know, when you get books like that, to me, there is hope for humanity. Unlike, you know, like, you know, what Richard Matheson said. Well, you know, you look at, that was the thing too, is Max looked at, you know, what had happened with the natural disasters here, how fast society broke down, especially after Katrina and stuff, and that helped him prompt, you know, writing World War Z, of how quickly, you know, humanity breaks down. Apparently he's very neurotic.
Yeah. You know?
So read the book, you know, and like Widge said, because I listened to the audio too, or they only had like portions of it. Now, do they have the whole thing now?
Yes, they put they put out like half the stories, and now they've put out the other half in an unabridged complete edition.
So there you go. Get that.
So the movie actually did some good for us.
Good.
But yeah, I would also say, as long as you're talking book club, you mentioned Richard Matheson. Read I Am Legend.
Yeah.
They've not really done it justice in the
movies. No, but nobody has.
And it is, to my knowledge, it is still Stephen King's favorite book.
Yes.
Which is saying something. So.
Which is amazing, because everybody gets it wrong. Everybody that, you know, it's like, how do you, you know, how do you as filmmakers read something and you miss the most poignant parts?
Well, I mean,
it's like, okay, well, okay, let's talk about the protagonist.
Right.
He's a normal guy. You know, he had nothing to do with what had happened.
Right. But so why would you turn him into a scientist? Because that completely defeats an entire plot point of the novel.
Right. And well, the cool thing is too, I remember reading it, it's like him going to a community college and trying to read a biology book to try to understand what is going on.
Right.
And it's so funny because it was sort of funny. I had to explain the ending, the real ending, to my boss. I'm like, well, no, it's, if you look at, I said it mirrors the whole Dracula ending of he is now the lone.
Well, yeah, don't completely spoil it.
Right.
Because sadly, a lot of people have not read the book.
But there's other stuff that Richard Matheson has written that, you know, he's written several for
Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote, you know, The Shrinking Man, which became The Incredible Shrinking Man, which I think, get this, it's like one of the stories of his that, you know, off of the short stories that translated really well as a film.
Yeah. He wrote Stir of Echoes.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Hell House.
Yes, Legend of Hell House. Yeah.
What Dreams May Come.
Yes.
Which was
a horrible film. Don't bother.
I liked it.
I mean, it was kind of his Dante's Inferno type of thing. A very pretty film to look at.
Yeah. But he, you know, tons of short stories. Yeah, which a lot of them were Twilight Zones.
Mm-hmm.
And wrote screenplays as well.
Yes.
So like Somewhere in Time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's see. What's that? Did he?
I thought that was Jack Finney that did Somewhere in Time. Is that the time travel?
No. He wrote the screenplay.
Oh, okay. Jack Finney wrote the book, right?
No. It's the novel is Bedtime Return by Richard Matheson.
So he wrote
the novel.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But no, he was a screenwriter as well.
Yes.
By the way, I do have to correct myself on something I said earlier. Brian K. Vaughan actually wasn't on Heroes had nothing to do with Heroes. That was I forget who the comic book writer, but he was on Lost. I mean, he was a producer and writer on Lost. Anyway, back to your guys' talk.
But yeah,
we could discuss this guy who ripped off his penis.
Huh?
What? Huh?
What?
Yeah, he stole his penis.
He stole his own penis?
Yes, he stole his own penis.
What?
Why?
No, some guy in a drug fueled decision making process, I guess. He ripped his penis off of his body with his hand.
Wait a minute. Wait. Okay, Lee. Are you too questioning what? Your humanity? Where did this come from?
Well, you posted up on Facebook that you were recording Weekend Justice, and then Brian, decided to ask us if we were discussing this.
Oh, I didn't see
of course
that.
We are not.
Oh,
except now we are.
Well, I guess so.
And
you know what? He sent it to me, and I looked at it, and then I stopped reading after I realized what it was about, because who wants to read about that?
Well, the best quote, though, is from the police officer, where the guy who was first on the scene said, he really wasn't saying much at all. A lot of yelling and screaming. You think?
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, it takes like 5 pounds of force, apparently, to rip off somebody's ear. So how much pounds of force does it need? Do you need to rip off a penis?
Okay. I was led to understand there would be no math.
And especially
especially emasculating math.
All right.
Jesus Christ. That's not right.
Hey, at least it didn't happen in Florida.
Well, how much suction does a pool suction? Never mind.
Oh, no, let's not talk about that, because then, no, no.
Yes, things.
And how lonely do you have to be to stick your penis in a pool suction thing?
Speaking of which, I saw This Is the End.
How was it?
It was very funny. Huh. It is not high art, that is for sure.
I figured.
Although, actually, it is high art.
Yeah.
It's not high art, and at the same time, high art. It was very funny. There were some parts that are kind of laggy a bit, but for the most part, it's funny. You have to, if you're going to see it in the movie theater, and see it with a crowd of people. It's one of those movies that, benefits from everyone being there just to have a good time. My wife and I wound up seeing it, and we saw it like on a weekday, in the middle of the day, and there was like nobody in there, so it was.
Is it as good as Pineapple Express? I liked that.
it's. I'm not going to ruin anything for you, but they do talk about Pineapple Express in.
Do they really? Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, they. They're all kind of playing themselves, so they can all kind of make fun of each other's careers and things like that.
Well, it was funny. They had the director on, Terry Gross, and they said that when they were writing that film, they left Seth Rogen's character last, because it's like, well, he'll wind up ad-libbing anyway or something like that.
Well, you know, he wrote and directed it with him.
Right. Yeah, but it's like they came up with all the other characters and then they threw him in. That's apparently how they write for him.
Well, that would explain Green Hornet.
They make fun of that too.
Good. Someone should.
He does too. I heard him on he made fun of himself for that too. He knows it was horrible.
Oh my God, this guy did it out in front of a school. What kind of nut job?
No pun
Green
intended.
Nut job. Nice. Well played.
Yeah, I know.
That would actually be nutrageous.
truly nutrageous.
Oh God.
Neds, they're truly nutrageous. Truly nutrageous.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Neds. Anyway. Yes? What?
So no, I was just going to say, I to be fair, it wasn't Seth Rogen's fault that film was shit. So.
Oh no, their point to that was that they were trying to make films for two different people at the same time. The Chinese audience and the American audience, and it just was not going to ever work.
Which is funny because I couldn't see anything that would appeal to anyone in that film.
And there was this point too.
Yeah.
Although apparently it did gangbusters in China. So, you know.
Weird.
They said they're going to make a Kato movie, not a Green Hornet one.
Which they should have done, because you know what the original idea was, right?
No.
It was, what is the guy's, what is the guy's name that we were going to, to basically do a Green Hornet movie where the new Green Hornet is the son of the original Kato. So you'd have Jet Li as Green Hornet.
That would have been awesome.
You'd have Ray Park as the Kato character.
That would have been awesome.
Exactly.
Or at least it would have been better. Maybe it would not have been awesome.
No. It would have been awesome because, I mean, you just imagine Jet Li and Ray Park being able to choreograph their own shit, and then you would have none of this. Oh God, it just hurts me. It hurts me.
Ray Park is an incredibly small man, though. I mean, he's big as far as muscular and width, but
he's compact.
He's very
compact.
Well, Jet Li as well. I mean, he's small, which is they're better able to throw themselves around and kick ass.
I know, but see, like for like when I'm looking at Ray Park as
Darth Maul?
Darth Maul and or Storm Shadow. Mm. Not Storm Shadow, excuse me, other one. Snake Eyes, thank you. Snake Eyes, he looks a lot taller than what he is in real life.
It's amazing what you can do with camera angles and lifts.
That's true.
Just check out Robert Downey Jr.'s footwear anytime he's on screen.
I've never noticed it. Is it extra padding?
Something like that.
He wears lifts.
Oh.
Yep.
He's short.
Well, yeah. But even then, like as Tony Stark, he's still shorter than everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the tallest guy in the room.
Yeah. Well, there's only so much you can do. That was like people were well done to have Gwyneth Paltrow in shorts and barefoot, walking around. I'm like, and somebody else was like, well, yeah, they did that so she would, be shorter to be closer down to his height.
So this is the end. I suggest you see it as try to see it with a packed theater if you can. I'm not sure how long it's going to be in theaters, but it's funny. It's it's Pineapple Expressy. It's super baddie. I mean, it's all that kind of.
How was the Emma Watson cameo?
Pretty damn funny. And it's unfortunate that some of the trailers have actually kind of ruined it a bit, ruined the surprise a bit.
Of her
and what she's doing. But it's interesting now that I think about it. It means, never mind. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Well, what I will say this.
An interesting fact that she's still in the movie because the perception of her would be that she wouldn't be in the movie after the first 20 minutes. But anyway.
Well, yeah. Well, like with Michael Cera and what they did with his quote unquote character. Oh, I thought that was hilarious. But to me, what sold me on the film was, I can't believe Hermione stole all our shit.
Right, exactly. Well, I wish they hadn't have actually put that in there because it would have been that line would have been a lot funnier hearing it in the context of which it was heard.
I don't know. I think it stays funny. To me, that is like a fucking great line.
Yeah.
Well, I plan to see it, so I'll report back.
And if you are a member of the, I don't even need to explain this to you guys. You are already going to do it. I was going to say, if you're a member of the herb taking community, that taking herb certainly would help the film. But you were going to do that anyway, so why do I bother telling you?
Well, I wasn't going to take that. I was going to take my friend Herb with me.
From the Burger King commercials?
Herb. Yes.
Whatever happened to Herb from those Burger King commercials?
I don't know. I actually was trying to just yes and, but I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
You don't remember those? You don't remember Herb?
No.
Oh,
I don't watch a lot of television.
Herb, Burger King. Hold on, I'm doing a search.
Oh, God. I don't remember this at all.
Where's Herb? Yep. Where's Herb was an advertising campaign for the fast food chain Burger King from 1985 and 1986.
That's actually when I was watching television. So that
television commercials featured a fictional character named Herb, who is described as never having eaten a Burger King burger in his life. They call on fans to visit their local Burger Kings in hopes of finding Herb and winning a prize.
So wait, you were supposed to go into a Burger King and start accosting strangers to ask them if they're Herb?
Yes.
Sounds like a quest to me.
The campaign led to controversy in early 1986. A 15-year-old boy spotted Herb at the Burger King restaurant in Bessemer, Alabama. Okay. And believed that he had won the $5,000. Because he was under the age of 16, the minimum age participating in the promotion, the prize money was given to the boy's older friend who was with him at the time. Burger King defended their decision, saying, it's Alabama. No, stating that...
Actually, I was going with that. I was like, well, it is.
The restriction was intended to dissuade students from skipping school to search for... But again, it's Alabama. The boys... Parents complained to the representative in the Alabama. Oh, of course they did. They complained to their representative in the Alabama State Senate. The matter was brought before a full state Senate, which passed a resolution condemning Burger King's actions.
Wow.
Oh, my God. There was nothing else apparently going on in 1986 that needed to be addressed.
That's right. Because, forget the condition of state education or anything. Let's just. let's get pissed at Burger King. That's amazing. I've never heard that story before.
The World Wrestling Federation also had her appear as a guest timekeeper during a boxing match. What? Between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. T at WrestleMania 2.
All right. I like Rowdy Roddy Piper.
This guy was all over the place.
That's amazing. I had never heard that before. That is hilarious.
Yes. So there you go. That's your home
state. See, to me, what's so funny is, it's like, first of all, that there was a time when $5,000 was actually be considered a sizable prize, right?
Right, exactly.
Today, that would buy you, I think, a Burger King burger, actually. And I thought that contests normally have a minimum age, not to keep you in school, but for fucking legal reasons. Like you, do you really want to be giving $5,000 to a minor, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, interestingly, hold on a second. They offered a 99 cent Whopper hamburger to everyone except her at the discount. Don't they already still do? Oh, no, I guess it's $1.99 now, right? Something like that? I don't know.
I don't know.
I thought it was 99 cents. I guess that's the junior Whopper. That's 99 cents. The customer had to say, "I'm not Herb," while ordering. And customers named Herb were told to say, "I'm not the Herb you're looking for." Obi-Wan Kenobi was also stated as saying the same thing.
Sounds like a quest.
Wow. Yep. So there's Herb.
Oh,
how the hell did we get on that track?
So, John.
I don't know.
John, you watch Cartoon Network, right?
I have, yes.
Did you see the PSA cartoon, it was like a little skit where they show Rigby and Mordecai from Regular Show, and they're just doing their slacker job, and it said, you know, you're just watching that for a few seconds, and it said, stay in school. And then they go, it's good. You don't want to be a park attendant with a raccoon and a blue jay. Just saying.
I had not seen that. No.
Stay in school, kids. You don't want to be like them. Even though I love that show.
I have watched the new Looney Tunes, though.
Yeah, is it good?
It's all right.
Oh.
Watch
Regular Show. It's like that movie Slacker, but in cartoon form. And fun stuff happens. Just saying.
My kids like it. The interesting thing about it is that it's more of a long format. It's 30-minute cartoon type thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, the Looney Tunes that we're used to of, like, you know, three
like
or four 10 minutes. Yeah, something like that. And it tells essentially a complete story, but it has these little vignettes in between. But they stay pretty true to the characters as far as, at first I was kind of objecting to it because of essentially the animation, specifically the animation for Roadrunner and Coyote bits, which are just all completely CGI, and they're not really very good CGI. Right. But the story, they're actually pretty clever. They're a little more the stories are a little more adult. They work on both levels, essentially. You know, they work on the
kid level
and the adult
level. That was the old Looney Tunes as
right,
well.
Exactly.
I mean,
so they've built this own little universe where they all kind of live next door to each other, type thing. And it is actually, it's pretty humorous. And if you have, you know, kids eight to 13, I guess, they might quite enjoy it. So, and it's good for the adults too. It's not horrible. It's no, my kids. They also watch things like...
Are you going to trade them in or something? That sounds like the exasperation
of dad. They watch things like Kicking It and Lab Rats and these horrible, horrible Disney live-action, horribly acted, terrible story shows and, you know, Wizards of Waverly Place, things like that. And it's like...
Well... But,
yeah, but okay,
John.
You gotta understand.
But then again,
when you show your kids something that you thought was cool,
Oh, well, I tried that.
I'm trying to think on who said this. They were talking about showing their kid something that they thought was great. Like, isn't this show awesome? I remember this as a kid, blah, blah, blah. Make that poor kid sit. And then the kid just gives them, yeah, this is nice. That sort of passivity.
I tried that.
I did that to my niece with Time Bandits, and she's like, yeah, it was okay. I'm like, what do you mean this is okay? This is a great film. Now,
I tried that, to be fair, just recently with G.I. Joe. Oh, it did not work. I couldn't even sit through. I'm like, what the hell was I thinking?
Oh, my God.
Really? Oh, no. G.I. Joe is, like, laughably bad. But
no, because that would make it enjoyable.
Time Bandits is fucking awesome. So
it
I think you should get your niece?
Yes.
Okay. You should get her to see a doctor. I'm just saying, because Time Bandits is fucking awesome.
I tried. My kids,
she was being polite to watch the entire thing.
Oh,
my kids
wow.
did not.
And
like,
you can tell. You can tell. You're just watching this to be polite, aren't you? Oh, it's nice. It's a good film. When they say it's nice.
Yeah, I tried to show my kids Back to the Future.
Oh, no.
No.
Whoa, what? What? What's wrong with Back to the Future?
Well, they didn't like it.
Oh.
Wow. So. John, are you sure they're yours?
I know, John. Sounds like some gypsies took your real kids away.
It's possible.
They're changelings.
Wow.
Sounds like somebody went on a quest to steal your children. Here you go.
Succeeded.
Here you get these lumpy ones. Here you go.
Lumpy ones?
No.
Well, but then my son is all into
what are they into?
Superheroes and whatnot. My daughter's into Harry Potter
right. I mean, that's not totally bad.
Right.
But see, I mean, it would be one thing if you were bringing up, like, apart from G.I. Joe, if you were bringing up stuff that really didn't hold up. But like Time Bandits holds up. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. It does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Back to the Future, especially the first film, really holds up. They're solid. Kids
yes,
these days.
I know. What was another one that I tried showing them that... Well, actually, but the thing is that my son really likes Gilligan's Island.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Even the black and white version.
No way. Wow.
First season. I got all three seasons through needcoffee.com/Amazon and bought that, and he's watched them all. Enjoyed
wow.
them, thought they were funny and everything else.
Huh.
But for whatever reason, there's certain things that they just, I don't know, they just can't.
Try Bewitched on them.
God, it's just, that blows
they
my fucking
They might like
mood.
That. Well,
Back
okay,
to the
you know what?
Is an awesome
I, you know,
movie.
I know, but
it
you
is.
Know what? It seems. Hold on. I think there's a thing going on that it seems that the kids these days. It seems like they're skipping what would be cool to the generation to go to the first generation. It's like, who did this? Trying to think that some of them, like, oh my, you know, they'll make fun of the, like, here it is, they're making fun, you know, they don't want anything to do with the 80s, however they'll go back further because it's cooler to go to, like, the stuff from the 60s, you know, whereas we were growing, I was like, oh, you know, you wanted no part of, you know, like the Brady Bunch and stuff like that, you know.
I watched the Brady Bunch.
You didn't?
No, I did.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you watched it, but you didn't care for it. For some reason, because it was part of syndication, it was the only thing on.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were lots of things that we watched that we only watched because there's the only thing on. But
right. But I think some people are just like skipping a generation type of thing.
Mm.
And
I don't know.
It's a theory. We could test it.
Now, okay. Here's the other thing. So, John, what do your kids think of Roger Rabbit?
I haven't showed that to them yet.
Okay. All right. That would be another good test, because that's sort of in that.
Yeah.
Sort of in that same sort of time period.
Yes.
So.
Oh, I saw Monsters University, too, as well.
Oh, okay.
How
real
was that?
Quick. How was it? I dread going.
My wife and kids liked it a lot. I thought it was okay.
Animal House in Cartoon Farm.
It was
be honest, John.
It's a sign of the Disneyification of Pixar.
Ooh.
So,
which we knew that
crazy.
I'm a little worried about it.
Well, I mean, what I find crazy is that, like I said, I think we mentioned this before, Pixar appears to have gotten worse. Disney appears to have gotten better.
Yeah.
So Disney really got the better end of the deal.
Which is basically them, which is Pixar anyway. So
yeah. My question, the question is what's John Lasseter doing? Where is he?
He's in charge of all animation.
I thought he was is he in charge of all animation? He's also in charge of the parks, isn't he? The rides of the parks?
Ooh, I don't think so.
No, what I heard was that what I heard was that he consults with them. Like he'll go and meet with the Imagineers and like kick around ideas, but I don't know that he's in charge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. At the Imagineering, he helps design attractions for the Disney theme parks. Yeah.
But he's not in charge, right?
He reports directly to the president, bypassing Disney studio and theme park executives. He's received green light power for films with, Roy Disney's consent as well. So basically he's their head. It seems like, for lack of a better term, their head Imagineer without he's a principal creative advisor at Walt Disney Imagineering, where he helps design, and then he can also just completely bypass everybody.
Well, then why is going
and go directly to the CEO?
Why is he then? It seems like the last sequel show movie was Toy Story 3 that was good,
right?
Yes, I mean because right. Cars 2, blah.
Terrible.
I don't think they'll ever do a. And the thing is I think Ratatouille was on a sublime level that it was like almost too high end. I liked Ratatouille, but I don't think
I liked it.
Filmgoers really kind of gelled with it. But what I'm saying is you won't see a sequel to that.
He exec produced Wreck-It Ralph, which was really good.
I liked that.
But again, that's Disney, which is
Disney,
better. No.
Yeah.
See, to me, okay. I see he's principal creative advisor, but that's different from being in charge of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, to me, that's like, oh, hey, you know, cause I understood that he would come in and kick around ideas and help people come up with ways around stuff and then be gone and go off and do whatever. But he is the chief creative officer of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios. So, but no, here's what I think has happened. Pixar has entered that period that Disney was in, like in the 80s, where you had that string of just mediocre films.
Ooh.
And what we need is eventually Pixar will have their own Lion King, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which I think was the way out. Was it that or was it Beauty and the Beast?
Beauty and the Beast that came out.
Okay,
first.
So it was Beauty and the Beast that basically made everyone go whoa.
Yes.
Because I mean that you know I think as we mentioned before that was up for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was back when Best Picture being nominated meant something.
Correct.
So.
Because they didn't have that's why they created the animation thing.
One. Yeah.
Right at the after yeah. a year, it's like okay, we'll have animation now.
And I'm gonna be honest with you. The Blue Umbrella, which is the what do you call it? The short that they had in front of it was not that good either.
Ooh.
I mean, it was kind of ingenious, but it wasn't. It didn't really tug on hit any emotional notes really. What was the other one? The Paper Man. I was just looking at this here. Paper Man that was in front of Cars 2?
Was Wreck-It Ralph, right?
Or Wreck-It Ralph. Oh, maybe it was Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah, you're right. Was I thought was really well done. I thought the artwork on it was brilliant, and it actually had some heart to it and whatnot. But the Blue Umbrella was just kind of, it seemed like more of the same thing, which is probably a bad thing for them, because right now it seems like they're Monsters University. It was a nice kind of, it was above quality for, you know, like a direct to video type thing, but it I don't know, it was missing something. It was missing like the normal heart that they have in their storytelling, that they've had at least in their storytelling. My kids liked it. My wife liked it more than she thought she would. But it had some humorous bits. And I thought it was funny. It was certainly, if it was, again, we've had this discussion before. If it was released by anybody else, you would have gone, oh, that was a good film. But because it suffers from being a Pixar film and the fact that you're expecting more, and maybe those days are kind of over, and Planes does not look to be doing it any favors.
Well, to be fair, they made it clear from the outset that Planes was, remember, because Planes is a Disney film. Have you noticed that? The Pixar name isn't on it.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they took it off.
Oh, it does say Disney Planes.
Yeah, huh. Planes is basically there to sell toys. And you know what? I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that, because they've made it clear that's what it's there for. And you know what? Great. But I wish they would get back to, you know, being Pixar, because that would be awesome. And it makes me sad.
Well, so, hopefully, I guess the next Pixar film coming out is Finding Dory.
Is that?
Oh, really?
No. Finding Dory is 2015.
Oh, The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yes, 2014. So
unless Frozen isn't Pixar, it's Disney.
No, Frozen's Disney.
Yeah, I can't tell. I can't get a vibe on that one, because I mean I've only seen some. Oh, I only seen one trailer, honestly, which was the one that was in front of Monsters University. But I can't quite tell if that's going to be, well, if it's going to be anything really.
Oh well.
So that's what I've seen. I've seen several movies over the past week.
Well done. All right. So we should probably do recommendations real quick. And there's only three of us, so everyone knows who we are by this point. So it's not even do introductions. Screw it.
Oh, hey, introductions.
Yeah. Here we go. Okay, good. All right. So
left and right.
I only had one. I wanted more.
I know how you feel, Kim. All right, Rox, what do you got to recommend for folks?
All right. Okay, so last week before, I lost my phone. I've never lost a phone before. So I lost my track phone, and it was an LG 500 whatever. Key. So it looked like a Faco BlackBerry. Okay, so I thought I'd take the plunge, kind of. Still a track phone. However, they have an LG 840G. It is the low-end smartphone. Ooh, smartphone. So it's got the little screen and whatever. Now, you can get this on Amazon cheaper than you can at Walmart, Target. It's like $45. And if you have Prime, you can get free shipping. Or if you need it next day, like I did, shipping was $4. So the cool thing about this phone is, you know, it's a phone. That's all I use it for, really. But it's got a camera. It's got all the stuff that a Faco, you know, smartphone has, a little screen. Everything's touch screen and whatever. You get triple minutes. That's the cool thing. Once you buy this phone, you get triple minutes for the rest of your life. I don't know if you can, you know, give it away, you know, when you die. But, you know, for your life and the life of the phone, you will get triple minutes. So if you had to buy minutes, like 60 of them, then all of a sudden, you know, for the price of 60 minutes, you get 120. No, 118, something like that. So an LG 840G, It's fine. It's a phone. It looks, you know, it's shorter than an iPhone. It runs on the, G3 network. So, and the cool thing, you can use it as the, on the Wi-Fi. It's got Wi-Fi. So you can actually hook it up to Wi-Fi and make calls that way or surf the, it's got a browser. So you can actually, you know, browse very slowly. Again, it's a low end, but if you want to look cool, like you got a smartphone, you know, but you don't have the money, $45 on Amazon. I'm going to go with the Ocean at the End of the Lane. As we discussed earlier, I went with the audiobook because it is, narrated by Neil, who really does a great job on his own stuff. Most authors will actually, you know, it's like Jim Dale, awesome guy to narrate your book because he's fabulous. The guy that does Game of Thrones, he's good too. You know, there are a lot of good, I don't know if there's like, an industry like, you know, awards for people who do.
There is.
Is there? Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Audi Awards, I think they're called.
Oh, okay. So yeah, Neil should win a couple with that. So this is a great book. I think it'll go on. Hopefully, you know, his children's books do really well on the New York Times bestseller list, but you know, I hope this one does really well because it's a really good book for, you know, older people too. And I think, one more thing, color ink book. I've touted these before. They're, it's color ink book. It is a coloring book for adults. It's the lowbrow work that they gather together, various artists and stuff. Issue, and I had to wait on this for some reason, issue volume 17, is the Chris Grimley issue for those who like Chris Grimley's really bizarre take on art and stuff. His characters are really cool. It's very goth like but with a sense of humor. For those people that were on my Christmas list got one year that I had something else printed on the inside. They're coloring books for adults and they're really cool. So I am done.
Oh, hold on. It's not working. Why doesn't it come out?
Oh, my God. Ding.
There. Things didn't work.
Things fall apart after 2 days of no food.
I thought it was two meals.
Two meals. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
It's late.
The more you know.
All right. Cool. John, what have you got?
You know me. I have absolutely nothing. I will tell you what I have ordered recently, though. You get a portable Bluetooth speaker for your iPad, iPod, laptop, MP3, and more. That was purchased through needcoffee.com/Amazon through sold by eSupplier, Inc. Also, the Belkin 3 Outlet Mini Travel Swivel Charge Surge Protector with dual USB ports for all your fine travel needs. Those two things are... Oh, and also a 6.5 foot long Galaxy Tab extra long USB charge and sync data cable for a Samsung device that Widge will never get to hear the story about until he finishes watching the following.
I'm going to!
Those are things that you can buy, those and many, many other items, if you go to needcoffee.com/Amazon. And the price is right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, holy shit. I was just looking at the Audi Awards. The 2013 winner for multi-voice performance, they did a version of Dracula with starring Alan Cumming and Tim Curry.
Oh, wow.
With a bunch of other like serious readers like Simon Vance, who does a shit ton of audiobooks as well. And I have no idea what this is, but I want to find out. There is a book called, and you'll appreciate this, Rox, called Die, Snow White. Die, damn you. I don't know what that is, but that title should win an award.
Yeah.
So yeah, I will echo what Rox has said and expand on it. I will say, recommendation wise for myself, go to Neil Gaiman's site, neilgaiman.com, and there's a place for his works where you can find the shit ton of audiobooks that he has read himself. And you'll find a bunch of like samples online that I'm sure he's linked to. So check that out. And any of his stuff is really good, which is available through audio or on CD through Amazon.com. Like John was saying, needcoffee.com/Amazon, which is a nice link to have, which gives us kickbacks, which we appreciate. And, so yeah, any of the Neil Gaiman narrated audiobooks, or any of his audiobooks in general. And I would also say that, yes, what we were talking about before, the World War Z unabridged audiobook that they've just come out with, mm-hmm. featuring, you know, like we've talked about before, Carl Reiner, Rob Reiner, Henry Rollins, Alan Alda, just a ridiculous, we've mentioned it before, Max Brooks broke out his dad's Rolodex and went to town.
Well, did you know that in that article, you got to read it. Apparently, Alan Alda was Max Brooks's mentor because, you know, Alan Alda was friends with, you know, the Brookses anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, with Alan Alda being such a science geek too, it's,
wow.
I can you imagine having that kind of upbringing with Jesus. That type of, you know, the people around them and stuff?
That would be cool. Awesome. That would be awesome.
And the thing is he didn't turn out to be like the typical schleppy, you know, Hollywood brat kid. This guy has got, you know, brains, you know, because his dad and his mom are really brilliant people.
Yeah. You know, so, the audiobook the audiobook is really good, but the book by itself is just really good as well. So mm-hmm. It's almost worth, you know, reading the book and then going back and doing the audiobook. But if you only have time for one, or you don't have, if you're like me, you don't have time to sit down and actually read anything anymore, go for the audiobook. It's your friend. So I highly recommend that as well.
Tim Curry is good. I just saw that, the thing about Dracula.
Yeah, I got to find that.
I do too. He was, for a while, he was narrating the Lemony Snicket books, and they were good when he did them. They were great.
Yeah, and I think he's done what was I thinking that he had done? Didn't he do like a Peter Pan and?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, he's, of course, he's got a great voice, so.
Oh my God, I gotta look at this list. This is an awesome list for audio people because really? I have a, you know, a subscription to, you know, Audible. It's like, okay, I have this stuff to do. So I use audiobooks when I have stuff I have to do because I had to wait on a new refrigerator. My refrigerator died. So I had to like clean and stuff like that, move the other refrigerator out of the way. So, you know, you're working around the house. So pop in an audiobook. So actually you're like multitasking.
Oh yeah.
One's a crap job and then you might as well make it interesting by using the audiobook. So.
Yeah, I did not realize that like Samuel Jackson had read A Rage in Harlem.
Mm.
How awesome must that be?
Oh wow!
Yeah, so if you want to if you want to just get if you don't know audiobooks, World War Z is a great way to get into it. Neil Gaiman's a great way to get into it. The Harry Potter books, which are read by Jim Dale, or the Game of Thrones books read by Roy Dotrice, those are both excellent. But yeah, go look up Audio Awards 2013 and you'll see there is a shit ton of stuff out here.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. So.
Oh, Stephen Briggs and Nigel Planer. If you're a big, Terry Pratchett fan, both of them are really good when they're narrating Terry Pratchett Discworld books.
There you go.
Yeah.
And if you do get the right audiobook, you might be able to glean a quest from it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Are we done?
I guess so.
Okay. Oh, what's going on?
We're done. We're done.
I think we're done.
We just got the sign off.
We did?
We can go. I signed my paperwork. Did you sign your paperwork?
Hold on one second.
Just send it through the mail.
Where, by the way, where are we supposed to be sending our time cards to these days?
They go to Lee.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Kim said she didn't want to do it anymore.
Well, it's only fair. She did it
and
for 2 years.
And Din just would retranslate everything. So that was causing Cosette all sorts of problems going from Latin math to Arabic math. It's just confusing.
Right. I was led to understand there would be no maths in any language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting paid nothing was getting hard.
I'm almost caught up on True Blood.
Oh.
If anybody cares?
No. I didn't. I watched the one episode and I'm like, oh no. Uh-uh. Again, it's that pet peeve and we'll leave it for next week because it's getting late. I have this thing. I have this thing, and I mentioned this before. If you're somebody that has lived an extensive amount of time, that you could live a couple centuries, do you really need to act like you're still 13 or 16 and you're all emo? Really? You could go to, you can get a choir. You can acquire any number of degrees.
You can get a choir.
Yeah, you can get a choir, yes.
Oh, okay.
The right church, you can just wrangle a bunch of choir people together. Yes, you can. If you have that hypnotic quality as an undead or somebody with longevity, yes, you can wrangle all sorts of people. Ooh. Anyway, I have this thing about like, oh, I'm 400 years old and I act like a spaz.
Well, it's. To me, it was much more interesting when you had like Interview with a Vampire, like with what's her name? Was it Victoria? Whatever her name was, where she was like eight forever.
Yes, yes. Well, she was an abomination. She even said that in the book. She was like an abomination.
Right, right. But no, that is true. It's why would you do that?
Yeah, it's, go out. If you know that you're going to live a long time, go take night classes. Really, better yourself. Become better. I'm not kidding. It's like the first underground move, whatever. What was that? Underworld? What was that? Yeah.
Underworld, yeah.
And everyone's like, it looks like they're hanging out in a vampire bar. Really? Really, people? Oh, my God. Oh, she's a bitch. Really? Oh, come on. You're 400 years old. Go to night school. Take deportment. Become better. Whatever. I'll get off that soapbox.
The Spaz House Institute for Furthering the Immortal.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Yes. It's a pet peeve I have.
I understand.
I run across these immortal people all the freaking time. It's like,
I know, I'm sure. Cause you are the Highlander.
Yeah. I'm better than them. I didn't have to go to night school.
There can be only rocks.
That's right. All right. Let's go. I got a flight tomorrow. So.
Oh, well, fine. All right. Well, we'll run away now.
Where are you flying to?
Oh, back home, up to Binghamton. I'm actually going for my 30th high school reunion. It'll be
wow.
Well, then to visit my mom. So it was a dual purpose. Yeah. 30 years high school.
Well, look for Herb while you're up there.
I will indeed.
Tell him we said hi and we want our money.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Give me just a minute while I clarify.
Hi there. Many of you know me as the half-assed engineer John on Need Coffee's Weekend Justice podcast. But what most of you don't know is that before I was internationally known by tens of people, I was a patient at the Sleep Deprivation Institute, known as NeedCoffee.com. NeedCoffee.com has provided me and many of you with hundreds of hours of therapy through engaging rants, dreamcasts, reviews, contests, news of the offbeat and cool, and of course, more information about caffeine than was really necessary. Why, without NeedCoffee, I might have actually seen Starship Troopers 4 bugging out. Thank you, NeedCoffee, for saving me from that fate. Now, all this goodness does come at a cost, so the fine folks at Need Coffee are asking for your help. Please head over to needcoffee.com/memberships to learn what you can do to keep this invaluable resource alive. Your contribution not only will allow for more great content and more chances to win free shit, but it might just save a kitten. So as you sit there, listening to this podcast, this free podcast, sipping on your $8 Café de Frou-Frou, think about what you could have done with that money instead. Sure, you could have donated to some worthy cause, or you could keep Need Coffee and kittens alive. Your choice. Visit needcoffee.com/memberships for more details. Oh, crap. Did I record that?
And here's Dakota.
Widge, stop.
Widge.
Stop. Now, Widge, why? Why are you... Widge, stop.
Okay. Widge out.
Well, I'm trying to give Widge plenty of space to edit
He's
that part
fine
out.
Done. He's done now.